All right.
Nick!
Gentlemen!
Nick's your buddy. Kind of guy you can drink a beer with.
Start your engine!
My papa's son wandering out a smoking gun. Now some of you would live through me and lock me up and throw away the key. Or just find a place to hide away and hope that I'll just go away. But I feel alright. I feel alright tonight. Feel alright tonight. And I'll bring you Christmas contraband and ancient tales from
All right. Good morning, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Skyline studio here, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago, here until 5 a.m. I'm your overnight dude, 1 a.m. to 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich follows this show at 5 with the opening bell, and at 6 o'clock, it's Steve Cochran for your morning drive. How's it going? It's Thursday. That means Triple Play Thursday. Yeah, man, Triple Play Thursday. It's one artist, three songs, 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Evidently, our text lines are once again being maintenanced. So they're down again. If you want to participate as we go along in the show, at this point, just the phone lines are going. The texts are not working. So we're working on seeing what's going on and seeing what maintenance is happening, and hopefully it'll be up soon. But we'll keep you posted on that. But the phone number and text number eventually when it starts working again is 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. It's also where you call to get your Triple Play Thursday requests in. Every day on the show, we let you guys pick the bumps, and there's a theme every day, and today is Triple Play Thursday. So you pick the music that comes back after the news and after breaks, and it's one artist, three songs, 312-981-7200. All right, coming up on the show after the break in just a few minutes, David Alan Arnold is going to join us. He is an Emmy Award-winning cameraman who flies in a helicopter and has done some really amazing stuff in the sky, won multiple Emmys, and worked on a ton of shows and a ton of movies. He films from the sky and has some really incredible stories and some dangerous stories. And he's written two books about it, one called Help from Above, which pretty much talks about how he went from a guy who was sweeping floors to a guy who was flying high above the sky, working for The Deadliest Catch and covering the sky footage for, you know, like the Super Bowl and stuff like that. And he's been in some very dangerous situations. A second book is called What Lies Above the Clouds, which is a true crime story, which is kind of a crazy story about how he got involved in a crime situation in his hometown. And never backs away from anything. But he started out sweeping floors, and he ended up high in the sky in a helicopter, being one of the most popular TV cameramen who flies helicopters. He's worked the World Series. He's worked Deadliest Catch. A ton of movies and a ton of TV shows as well, and two pretty great books about his experiences up in the sky being a TV cameraman and winning the Emmy Gold. His website is davidallenarnold.com, and he's going to be joining us live to talk about his experiences in the sky, some of the crazy stories that he's the crazy situations that he's been in, some of the crazy stories that are in both of the books that he has written. So that's David Alan Arnold. Also joining us, another writer, Edward McClellan, who is the author of How to Speak Midwestern and Folk Tales and Legends of the Midwest. He's a native of Lansing, but he lives here in Chicago, and he's written a couple of articles that have shown up in Chicago Magazine, but he's written stuff for the New York Times, Los Angeles Times, Slate, Salon, all over the place. But we're going to talk about two very specific Midwestern articles that he's written for Chicago Magazine. One, a guide to very specific Midwestern sandwiches, and we know how food can be in different areas of the country. Well, these are very, very, very specific Midwestern sandwiches we're going to get into. And then a Downstate Illinois dictionary. My mom's from Downstate Illinois, and she has an interesting way of talking, and as do many people from Downstate Illinois. So we'll talk with Ted about that. That's coming up a little bit later on. Today, August 15th, marks the beginning of the Woodstock Festival 50 years ago. 50 years ago today was the first day of Woodstock. So we're going to talk about that. And then that's going to jump us into a different a topic here about the 50 greatest concerts of the past 50 years. And then I want to open it up to you guys and find out what your favorite concerts have been. What are the best live shows you've ever seen? What are the best live bands you've ever seen? Or maybe what was the worst concert you've ever been to? So we'll talk great concerts from the past 50 years. We'll reminisce about Woodstock, this being the 50th anniversary of the beginning of that festival today, and much more. Again, 312-981-7200 is the phone number. The text lines are down right now. We'll let you know when you can text in as we keep an eye on what's going on with the maintenance of the text situation and more, and your Triple Play Thursday choices. So there you go. All right. Let me say hello to my great producer, Tom Hush. Tom, how are you?
I'm good, Nick. How are you?
I'm all right. Are you caught up on Big Brother?
Well, I was going to watch it last night because I was on freaking out based on who was on the chopping block. But the thing about being in a relationship is sometimes you have to compromise.
I see.
And so I got to watch SmackDown, but she wanted to watch something different. I mean, we watched When They See Us, the Ava DuVernay miniseries. So yeah. It's not like it was a bad watch,
right.
But I was kind of like, I was watching Big Brother.
We'll see who gets booted tonight.
Yeah.
But I don't think you're going to be happy with what happened on last night's show. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah, I had a feeling.
Otev came back, though, which is always hilarious.
Yeah.
always hilarious. That's actually one of my favorite. That's always one of my favorite competitions, the Otev competition, where they're on the water slide and they're getting sprayed with stuff. And Otev's going, and screaming at them. And they have to run into the mud and pick out the right product to bring back up to Otev. And that's always one of my favorite competitions of the season. And it was a good one last night. So we'll see who gets booted on tonight's show. I have a feeling I know who's going to get it. I won't say anything.
Yeah.
But there were three people on the block.
Yeah.
Leading into last night's show. There are now only two people on the block because someone used the veto. So
I imagine. I figured that was going to happen.
Yep. But... So
I have the idea. I'm like, okay, I think I see where this is going.
You're right.
But you never know.
the hunch that you have is correct.
Yeah.
Like I said, that challenge that they do, that veto challenge with Otev is always one of my favorites of the season. So that was entertaining. And then, and despite the fact that, there are a few people in the house that I've grown to like. As opposed to like the first like two or three weeks of the season, I was like, I hate everybody in this house. They're all morons. And that still kind of is applicable. But yeah. So anyway, that's it's on tonight. It'll be live and someone will get the boot. Someone will get evicted.
There will be no compromise tonight.
No.
I have to put down the foot and just be like, please let me watch this.
I'm going to have to put down the foot and say, please let me watch that.
Listen, I'm a modern man.
Yeah.
You know, I use nice words.
Yeah.
I use the magic word, please.
Right.
Otherwise, I'll just sequester myself somewhere and just watch it on a laptop.
Well, I think the less we say about the Cubs, Hamels got pummeled.
Mm-hmm.
On his return, he got a standing ovation from the crowd.
He did.
They played in Philly. They got a standing ovation from the crowd, and then he gave up 8 runs in 2 innings.
Yeah, that was. I had that running on. I was watching on my laptop simultaneously. I was like, okay, I'm going to close this now.
Yeah, no, there was a time I was switching back, and I was watching a little bit of it. And by the time Big Brother started, Big Brother didn't start till 8. By the time Big Brother started, I didn't have to worry about going back and checking the score anymore because the game was essentially over. And I don't know, it's frustrating to watch the Cubs on the road, man. It is really, really, this season has been unbelievably frustrating to watch those guys on the road. And last night was just embarrassing. Jeez. All right. Hey, let's go into the newsroom, and it's Vic Vaughn. Vic, how are you?
Hi, what's up, Nick? I'm doing fine.
Good, man. You didn't see any of the fantastic Cubs, did you?
No, I was sleeping.
Okay, you were sleeping.
So I missed the 11-1 destruction.
Yeah, it would be would they call that technically a shellacking?
Yeah.
That's what they call it. And Cole Hamels came home to Philadelphia and just got rocked.
Yeah.
It was embarrassing. So, but anyway, they got a chance to not get swept tonight. 6:05 first
pitch. Darvish does.
Yeah, we'll see how Darvish does. So let's it'd be nice if they could score some runs. You know?
More than one, hopefully.
Yeah, it would be really nice.
They'll probably beat them 10-2 tomorrow. Yeah, well, Cubs will beat them 10-2.
Yeah, that's probably what's going to happen.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. It's just frustrating to watch them on the road. They, you know, and it's another. This is they're only halfway through the road trip. They're just above halfway through.
Six. So.
Yeah. So anyway, by the way, I want to mention that if you go to WGNRadio.com, you can watch a video profile of our own Vic Vaughn. It's featured right on the front page. Go to WGNRadio.com, and you get to know all about our buddy Vic Vaughn, who's in the newsroom. Now, they're doing a profile. They're doing profiles of everybody who works in the newsroom and anchors and all that stuff, correct?
That's what I've been told.
And you're the first one.
Guinea pig.
Yeah, you're the first one right out of the gate. If you want to learn about Vic Vaughn, there's a great video there. He's a fascinating guy, lots of really cool stuff, and I'm happy to have him on my show. I'm so glad that you're the newsman that works on my show, Vic.
Oh, I appreciate that, man. It's an honor.
You do a fantastic job, and it's fun talking to you, and it's fun to have you part of the show. And I love doing Vic's Picks with you every Friday morning. And I think it's awesome that you're the very first member of the WGN Radio News team that's being featured on our website.
Thanks, man. I appreciate that. I do. And, you know, you're a great radio guy. You've been in this business forever. So, seriously, honored to be on your show.
No, it's always great to work with you, man. I look forward to it every morning. And I want everybody to get to know Vic. So, go to WGNRadio.com and go to the profile of Vic Vaughn. He is the very first of the WGN news anchors that will be profiled. And it's a very cool video. I watched it earlier, and it's awesome. So, and you get to hear him every morning from 11 to 6 a.m. right here on WGN as part of our show as well. So, all right, there's Vic in the newsroom. Check out WGNRadio.com and look at his profile and his video. It's really, really cool. And Tom is producing, and I am hosting, and we are taking a breaking right now. When we come back, David Alan Arnold, who is an author and an Emmy Award-winning helicopter TV cameraman, is going to join us. Incredible stories coming up right after this on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. And we are live in the Skyline studio here on WGN here till 5 a.m. It is Thursday, Triple Play Thursday. Get your requests in now. That's one artist, three songs, 312-981-7200. Coming up a little bit later on, Edward McClelland is going to join us. He is the author of How to Speak Midwestern and Folktales and Legends of the Midwest. We're going to talk about a couple of pieces that are now available at chicagomag.com. Very specific Midwestern sandwiches and a downstate Illinois dictionary for you to follow along. Today is the 50th anniversary of the first day of Woodstock. We're going to jump in about that and then talk about concerts as well. But right now, I would like to welcome to the show an author, an Emmy Award-winning TV cameraman who flies a helicopter and has been in some really crazy situations during his job. He has worked on such shows as The Deadliest Catch and Ice Road Truckers. He's worked on American Idol and the World Series and the Super Bowl and many, many more credits. He's written two books about his adventures, one called Help from Above and another called What Lies Above the Clouds, which is a true crime story. And they're both documentary series where you can see this guy's story. And we're going to hear his story directly from his mouth. And it is Emmy Award-winning author, helicopter pilot, TV cameraman, David Alan Arnold. Let's welcome David to the show. David, welcome.
Nick DiGilio, thank you so much for having me on again.
Oh, it's my pleasure. How you been?
Very blessed. Right now, we are flying helicopters in California to try and prevent... I don't know if you know this, but last year we had the deadliest fire season in the history of the state.
Oh, absolutely.
And so we're flying every day and using ultra high definition cameras to examine the power lines, which caused some of the fires last year. And we're trying to check every pole in California to prevent that kind of a fire this season.
I've had friends last year who actually had to evacuate their homes. That luckily, you know, the winds changed and there was no damage, or maybe in a couple of cases a little bit of slight damage, but luckily for that. But it's scary. I mean, it's scary as hell. You got to evacuate your home.
Yeah, so many people lost their homes, and a lot of people were killed last year by the wildfires.
Yeah, It's crazy. It's crazy. Well, let's tell everybody your story again, David. It's fascinating because, as we said before, you started out sweeping the floor, and then you went up and painted the sky. So, and that's and it's a pretty incredible story. Let's go to the beginning, and then we can talk about some of the other stuff.
You bet. So, I'm really glad that kids today can read that story of how I started my career, because you know how everyone complains about the new generation or the millennials. They're, you know, they don't work hard enough. They feel entitled. You know, there's a lot of complaints, and I really disagree. I believe that today's generation is just like my generation and every other generation. And
by the way,
really
I just
important.
Want you to know, David, I just want you to know, I hate to interrupt you, but my producer is only 25 years old, and he began applauding when you said that. I just want you to know.
Yeah. Well, God bless Tom. I believe in Tom's generation, and I think it's really important for kids today who are entering the world of work or starting to think about it to read a story like mine and find out that I didn't go to college. I wasn't particularly well qualified to do a high-tech career. And in fact, I was hired in my field specifically for my work ethic. They knew that they could teach me everything else. And the fact that I show up on time, work hard, and don't complain when something's wrong at work, which is just about every day, was really, it meant more to them than any college degree or any resume. And so that's how I started with no technical skills. I was hired off the street, just a hungry kid. And my coworkers, my colleagues kind of laughed, and some of them literally said, "What are you doing here? Why did they hire you?" Mm-hmm. And I found out, you know, over time that I was hired because I was hungry and willing to work hard. And that got me started. So I didn't know how to use the equipment that I fly with every day, you know, now. But I knew that the shop was dirty when I started.
Yeah.
And I could help. So no one told me to, but I just picked up a broom and I started sweeping the floor in the aerospace facility. And I didn't know any of the equipment or how to use it or fix it, but I knew how to make the room neat. And so I swept and swept, and I swept until about 2 o'clock in the morning. And no one told me to do this. I just stayed late. And the next morning when the bosses walked into the building, they didn't recognize the place because I had cleaned it. So I cleaned it more thoroughly than it had ever been cleaned. And I was still there wearing the same clothes I had on the day before, and they couldn't recognize the place. And they immediately promoted me on the spot. And so I love for kids today to hear, you know, stories of things that worked for me and things that maybe they could use in their work life.
Yeah, it's a great story. It really is. And it's just, it's a testament to what hard work can do. And hard work can do. And that's, you know, that's something that I picked up from my parents and my father, especially because there wasn't a time. Yeah, I come from a just an absolute, you know, working class factory worker family. And I don't remember a time when my dad didn't have two jobs. I don't remember it as a kid. Every memory that I have from being a very small child to being, into my 20s, my dad held on to two jobs.
Wow. Yeah. What an example.
Yeah, and he'll be 78 on September 1st, and he still works at a grocery store here, chain called Jewel. He's been working there for 12 years, and he also still does from home, he still does vending sales from his house because he can't slow down. My dad, you know, pushing 78, and he just can't sit still. And that's the work ethic that he taught me too as a young kid.
Yeah, and I believe in that. And God bless your dad, and I love hearing him on your show.
Yeah, he's pretty great, man. He really is. All right, David, hang on, okay?
Okay.
Okay, we got a break for the news, but David Alan Arnold is with us. He's got an incredible story to tell and incredible stories from flying the helicopter and a pretty incredible true crime story, too. The books are called Help from Above and What Lies Above the Clouds, and it's great to welcome David back to the show. We'll take a quick break for the news, which is coming up right after this. Yeah. right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. How are you? It is Thursday morning, Triple Play Thursday. Get your requests in. We'll play them later. It's one artist, three songs, 312-981-7200. Live in the Skyline Studio till 5 a.m. All right. Let's get back to our conversation with David Alan Arnold. He's an author, an Emmy Award-winning TV cameraman who flies in a helicopter and has done some really amazing things. His books are called Help from Above and What Lies Above the Clouds, which is a true crime story. And let's get David back on the show. David, welcome back.
Nick, thank you so much for having me on. I have a, you know, I have a big affection for late night talk radio.
Well, I appreciate that, and yeah, well, there's it's a fun place to talk. I love talking at 1:30 in the morning to people. It just makes me happy.
So, I live for it, and when I'm up late sweeping the floor like I did when I first started my career, late night talk radio is one of those things that kept me going.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting, and I've always said this, that this is a very important time slot, I think. It's a very intimate time slot, because people are either, you know, some people are working, like you said, David, and our show, we try to keep it light and entertaining and try to get people through the morning, and some people are sick, you know, because you're up late or you live alone or you're, I take this time slot very seriously, and I'm glad that I get people through the night. We have truck drivers and third shifters all over the country who listen, so.
I love it. It's like brain food for my ears.
Yeah. All right. So we just established that you knew nothing about any of the stuff. Just get through hard work and perseverance, sweeping the floor, cleaning the place. So how does one go from that to flying helicopters and doing the stuff that you do now? I mean, that's really so. Tell us how you went, how you started to fly helicopters and how that happened.
Well, I'm just a cameraman, so I fly in helicopters, but I don't pilot the machine. And that was how I, you know, a lot of people look at my career, and I travel around the country. So sometimes I'm in Chicago for a Bears game, for example.
Right.
And when people see the equipment that I bring to Chicago, that I operate in the airplane or the helicopter that we're using to fly above the Bears, it's very, I mean, the cameras cost about $500,000. They are very complicated, very sensitive. They're computer controlled. It takes a lot of experience and knowledge just to make the cameras work correctly for the Bears game. And people see all that technology and they go, wow, Dave, did you go to school for this? And that's the funny part about my story. I didn't go to school for that.
Yeah.
And so I really love for kids today who are thinking about if they want to go to college or if they want to just start working. I love for them to hear my story and then maybe think a little harder about if they have to take the first job that comes along, or maybe they could do something bigger and better. Or, you know, do they want to go to university, or do they just want to start working and getting paid?
Yeah. So it's really just it was trial by error and learn as you go.
Yeah, I didn't know what I was doing, and when the company that hired me and gave me my big break was a company called Westcam, and I didn't know that they were looking for someone. I didn't know that I was being interviewed when I was. But, and this is another great lesson for kids today, because they always, the two questions I always get are, A, Dave, did you go to school for this? And I did not. And the second question is, people always ask me, Dave, how do I get a job like that? And I always tell them, listen, here's the truth of the matter. Everybody is always hiring. So they may not give you a job today, but they're always hiring in a sense that they will need someone eventually.
Yeah.
Most companies have turnover. Someone quits, you know, moves away, you know, for any variety of reasons. And that can happen suddenly, which it did in my case. So there was a high-tech company that I used to visit regularly and ask for work. And one day they told me to quit coming around because I had no knowledge to do the work that they do. And so I said, okay, I scratched them off my list, and I quit coming around to visit them. But then unbeknownst to them, somebody put in their notice and quit. And all of a sudden, they needed to hire somebody. And every time I came to see them, they weren't hiring. But when that need arose, they remembered me. Mm-hmm. They remembered that I was always in a good mood, always offering to help. You know, I used to come in the front door and I'd say, hey, you guys, I'll work for free. And you guys, you can just decide if you want to keep me around. And And they remembered that when someone left the company and they had an opening. And they told me point blank. They said, "Dave, we can hire someone from Hollywood. We can hire someone from New York with, you know, tons of experience and a pedigree. But we like the fact that you seem hungry. Are you hungry?" And I said, "Yeah, I'm hungry. I'm hungry." And they said, "Okay, we're going to think it over and we'll let you know in a couple of days what we decide." And I went home that night and I thought about it, and I was taking the trash out at my little apartment, and I looked in the dumpster when I threw the garbage in, and I saw at the bottom of the dumpster was the most perfect way to show them how hungry I was. So I dove in the dumpster and I pulled out an old pair of dirty work boots that someone had thrown away. They were torn up and covered in oil, and I took one of the boots, put it on a nice plate, and took a picture of myself cutting into that boot as if it was a sirloin steak. And I had the picture delivered to the office the next day, and they hired me on the spot.
Wow. That's a great story. That's really something. That's really something. Hey, I want to talk about the books, and then I want to get into some of the other things that you've accomplished. But let me just say this, David. You really know how to open a book. Let me just say that, you know, if people are not compelled to read the rest of your book when they read the first chapter or the introduction, because the first one details you in a helicopter, and the helicopter's going to crash and you're going to be eaten by bears. And in the second book, you're almost killed by a crazy driver ramming your Ford truck repeatedly while your five-year-old is in the child seat next to you. Was this a conscious decision to open the books with this kind of a grabby story?
Yes. There's a documentary producer who's been producing a documentary about my life, and he read a rough draft of my book, and he gave me 800 notes because I'm not a very good writer. Yeah. I had misspelled stuff. I had put things in the wrong order. And so here I am. I'm fixing all of the mistakes that he didn't like. And he said, "Dave, why don't you start the book with one of your stories?" And
oh, we lost David. Okay, let's hold on, David. Well, we just lost David. The connection just went out. So why don't we take a break here, and we'll get David back on the line. We had a weird connection, and he just went out. By the way, his books are available. They're called Help from Above and What Lies Above the Clouds. We'll get David back on the line. And by the way, if you want to check out his website, it's davidallenarnold.com, davidallenarnold.com. And we also have that linked up on our Facebook page. There's another reason why you should like our Facebook page. It's directly linked up there. So go to facebook.com/NickDShow. Okay, we're going to talk. We'll get David back on the line, and then we'll talk more with David after we take this break here on WGN. Right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DeGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Skyline studio here till 5 a.m. It is a Thursday morning, Triple Play Thursday. Get your requested now, one artist, three songs, 312-981-7200. Coming up after the 2 o'clock news, Edward McClelland is going to join us. He's the author of How to Speak Midwestern and Folk Tales and Legends of the Midwest. He wrote a couple of articles that appear in Chicago Magazine. You can check out chicagomag.com. A couple of fun ones, which include a Downstate Illinois dictionary and a very specific guide to Midwestern sandwiches. He loves to write about the Midwest and in its quirks. So that's coming up after 2. Right, and also coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. All right, before the break, we lost David. David Allen Arnold was on with us. He's an author, an Emmy Award-winning TV cameraman who has written a couple of books. Is having a documentary made about his life, which is a great and crazy life. We lost him, but he's back. David, welcome back.
Hey, Nick. Sorry about that.
That's okay. That's okay. So you were in the middle of the story before we took a break here. You were in the middle of the story about how an editor was looking at your book and saying, "Hey, maybe you should start the book with one of your stories." And you took his advice and you started it with one of the most compelling openings I've read in a book.
I did. It's a story that I have told very few people on earth, and it's one of my worst days at work, and it's the day that the engine stopped in our helicopter in Alaska, and we fell out of the sky. And it's kind of my worst nightmare is I've been flying around the world for 25 years, and I always worry, you know, is this engine going to keep running? Are we going to keep flying over the Super Bowl, or are we going to have a problem? Or, you know, when we get, you know, close to some of the terrain in Alaska, the glaciers and the mountains, there's really no one there. Sometimes there's the only life around you are things that will eat you. If you have to land your helicopter, yeah. And we did. And so our engine quit running and we came right out of the sky. And so that's how help from above begins.
Yeah, absolutely. And you described the situation around you. And I love the description that you have about the bears, just looking, staring down, at the stream that they're at, like it was a buffet. And they hadn't eaten, and there were actually no salmon at the time. So all of this stuff is going through your mind as your helicopter is flinging down to the ground.
Yeah, the bears are the size of a small car.
Yeah.
And they in Alaska they hibernate in the winter, and they don't eat, and they wake up in the spring, and in this case they were all gathered around a salmon stream. And they were waiting for a fish to swim by so they could eat their first meal in months. And I didn't know that. I just happened to look out the window and I saw all these bears down there. I'm just marveling. Wow, that's a lot of really big bears. And my pilot mentioned just matter-of-factly, he said, oh, yeah, and the salmon are running late. So there's no fish in that stream.
Oh.
So I literally said to myself, I'll never forget it. The thought that came crystal clear in my mind was, oh, man, I hope every nut and bolt in this helicopter keeps working so yeah. that we can keep it flying yeah. and stay away from those bears. And that was when I noticed that one of the gauges was starting to flicker.
Right. And you describe it in the book. Now obviously you made it. You made it out of that situation. But you've been in a lot of situations that are pretty scary. Now you've worked on many, many shows. And a couple of which are scary to watch. Like for instance, The Deadliest Catch in Ice Road Truckers. You watch those shows and what these guys go through and what they do is so unbelievably dangerous and sometimes crazy and very often very courageous. But yet you guys are there documenting it, and that's, you know, just as dangerous as those guys and what they're doing, and you're in the air covering that stuff. How crazy does it get covering a show like Deadliest Catch in Ice Road Truckers?
Oh, it got super crazy on day one. We landed in Dutch Harbor for the first time. We were about to begin filming season one of The Deadliest Catch, and our helicopter blades wouldn't stop spinning. So we had shut the engine down, and we're all just sitting in the helicopter, and the blades won't stop. They're windmilling because the wind is so powerful in Dutch Harbor that it's blowing the blades around. And that was my introduction to Dutch Harbor. It is just such the weather there is so powerful. The Coast Guard guys saw our little helicopter and they walked over and they looked at it as if they had seen a ghost. And one of them said, he goes, you guys are going out there and that?
Mm.
And it was, they couldn't believe it. They were flabbergasted because they fly a Black Hawk.
Yeah.
And one of their Black Hawks had just crashed.
Yeah.
And they said, look, it's so scary here. We have to check in with our office every 10 minutes just so they know we're still alive.
Man.
Yeah, and that was my introduction to season one of The Deadliest Catch.
So, I mean, you know, so when you go from something like The Deadliest Catch in Ice Road Truckers to just, you know, Master Chef, that must just be... relief. My job today, I mean, I'll be in the air, but at least, you know, it's MasterChef and I'm not covering, you know, I'm not in the middle of a crazy windstorm covering Deadliest Catch.
It, It is. It's very much a relief to be flying in the lower 48 where, you know, if I land in the helicopter, nothing's going to try and eat me.
Right.
And Alaska, people don't realize how big and how empty Alaska is.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone has a romantic, seems to have a romantic notion of Alaska. For me, it's not romantic at all. It's Alaska is bigger than most countries.
Yeah.
And there are no people there. There's yeah. almost no one in Alaska. It is all empty. There's no roads. So it's as big as a country. But yet, because there are no humans really living there, there are no roads. So when we fly across Alaska in our helicopter, there's nothing there. If we have a problem and have to land, there's no one around for sometimes hundreds of miles.
That's so scary. That really is. Now, listen, I want to get into, because you've worked on so many things. It's just unbelievable the amount of movies and TV shows that you've worked on. And they range from, you know, like Entourage to Amazing Race. You've worked up keeping up with the Kardashians you've worked on and so much stuff. You've covered NASCAR and football and baseball and X Games and all that stuff. But I have to ask you, and, you know, and that's all documented and amazing. But this second book that you wrote. This is really crazy. You stumbled upon a crime ring in your own hometown at your kid's school.
I did.
And then you documented this. Wow. Tell me about how that started, how you stumbled upon it, and how, where the book What Lies Above the Clouds comes from.
Well, What Lies Above the Clouds is the reason I'm writing books.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the book that I wrote first.
Okay.
And it is a true story of crimes that I witnessed at the school bus stop in my town. And I discovered that there was an organized crime ring at the school bus stop. And I first was shocked and immediately organized the neighbors to try and protest and gain information and see what we had to do to fix this problem and make the kids safe again. And, as I got more and more into it, I realized how dangerous this group was. And within 6 months, I was the only one left complaining about these guys. And I used to stand across the highway and just watch when the kids were there to make sure nothing bad happened to them. It was so dangerous. And it was the kind of criminality that we should never, ever allow at a gathering place for small children. And I wrote the book about that because nothing was being done to correct the situation and make the children safe. And someone read that and they said, okay, this is fine, Dave, but first you have to put out a book about who you are and what you do
so that
people have a frame of reference for your life and what changed in your town that took it from one of the safest neighborhoods in America to one of the most dangerous. And so I did. So I wrote both books.
Well, ultimately, what happened with that whole true crime story about that crime ring? You know, ultimately, what happened?
It's ongoing. The only records of it are in my book. Because this is how organized crime operates. They cover up their wrongdoing, and they hide it from the public. And so for years, when people found out what was happening in my town, for years, people would look at me kind of strange, and they would say, is there a copy of your footage somewhere?
Mm.
Because they knew that I would naturally be a target for these people to try and keep their crimes a secret. And my book blows the lid. I name names of everything that happened at that school bus stop. And I, everything in that book is documented, filmed, and photographed. And I have a 4-inch stack of government documents on the place. And so, you know, anyone who picks up a copy of What Lies Above the Clouds will have an opportunity to read not only a true crime story, but a true crime story that has never been investigated by police.
Wow. Wow. And as I mentioned, you opened the book very compellingly with someone trying to murder you, trying to repeatedly ramming your Ford truck over and over again. You trying to call 911, your 5-year-old son next to you in a car seat. Did they ever catch the guy that rammed your car and almost killed you?
Not that I know of. I think if I had had a dash cam recording, they might have issued a warrant, but You know, they told me to come in and file a report. So I did that. And I never, ever, I don't even drive rental cars anymore without a dash cam running after that night.
Yeah.
And, it was just one of 100 things that happened that I never should have experienced. My son never should have experienced. And my town never should have experienced any of that kind of behavior that literally terrorized my neighbors for 5 years.
Oh, that's really unbelievable. How's your son doing, by the way?
He's awesome.
Yeah.
And I like to believe I'm very honest in my book about my mistakes and things that I shouldn't have done or mistakes that I made. But I really believe that it's important to teach our children not with the things that we say to them, but by the things we do.
Right.
And in my son's life, he's going to experience situations like that where everyone is looking the other way about something that is known to be illegal and dangerous. And he'll have a choice just like I did. And I hope that he doesn't cower before evil. I hope that he stands up and makes the town safe again, because that's what I chose to do.
Yeah. Well, it's all written in a terrific book, and the book before it, Help from Above, which is a great portrait of a really talented guy. They're both great books, Help from Above and What Lies Above the Clouds. What are you working on now, David?
Well, like I said, I literally just walked out of the helicopter hangar. We're flying above the forest and power lines in California and trying to make sure.
Oh, right. Mm-hmm.
That we don't have the kind of fires that we had last year that killed so many people.
Right.
And I just love to be a part of that. It's such a thrill. I love working on TV shows too,
mm-hmm.
but it's such a thrill to be a part of an effort to make the world a safer place.
Yeah. Well, and I think you have a great story and you tell it great, and good luck with everything that you do in the future. Check out davidallenarnold.com for the website, all the stories, all the two books and everything and all that cool stuff. David, you do great work, my friend, and thank you for joining me.
You do too, Nick, and thank you so much for what you do. I think sometimes you probably don't get thanked enough for keeping us all entertained and informed the way you do every night.
I thank you for that, David. Okay, you have a great morning, okay?
You too.
Take care. David Arnold, everybody. And you can check out davidallenarnold.com for his books and his story. Great guy. All right, we'll take a break here. And then after the news, we're going to talk to another writer. After the 2 o'clock news, Edward McClelland is going to join us. And he's got a couple of really fun articles that he wrote for Chicago Magazine, a guide to very specific Midwestern sandwiches, and a Downstate Illinois dictionary for you to understand why people talk the way they talk in Downstate Illinois. Okay, the news is coming up right after this.
I'm just a plain old Midwestern boy. Yes, I'm getting by on Central Time. Some people say that the Mississippi River is the backbone of the nation. They can say whatever they want. I won't disagree with that statement. I see people working hard as ever. Just wonder what I...
All right, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. And we are live in the Skyline Studio here, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. Triple Play Thursday, get your requests in now. We'll play them in a little bit. That's one artist, three songs. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Today marks the Woodstock Festival's first day. So we're going to talk about Woodstock, reminisce about that, and then we're going to talk about some of the greatest concerts of the past 50 years and some other music topics as well. And we got some special effects in movies that that were crazy, crazy hard to do. So, and much more. Our phone number is 312-981-7200 for talk and text and for your Triple Play Thursday requests. You can also follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show and stay connected with our Facebook page at facebook.com/Nick D Show. My next guest is a writer. He was born in Lansing, Michigan, which, by the way, is also the birthplace of Burt Reynolds and the Oldsmobile. A couple of the articles that we're going to talk about that he's written have appeared in Chicago Magazine, but he's appeared in a bunch of other publications. He's also written books. He's the author of How to Speak Midwestern and Folk Tales and Legends of the Midwest. And we're going to talk a little bit about the Midwest with Edward McClelland, who also goes by Ted, and we'll welcome Ted to the show. Ted, welcome to the show.
Hey, great to be here.
All right, how you doing?
Good. I'm staying up. I'm going to power through for the late night crowd here.
There you go.
Hello to everybody on third shift.
There you go. Yes, we have a lot of people on third shift. Born in Lansing, Michigan.
People on third shift there.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. So tell me about what it was like to be born in Michigan, and is that where the whole fascination with the Midwest started with you?
Yeah, sure. I mean, what was it like to be born in Michigan? I mean, you were just, mentioning third shift, I went to high school across the street from a Fisher Body Auto Plant.
Oh, sure.
It was going 24 hours a day, and, all indelible memories of high school track and field, inhaling paint fumes from across the street. And guys, when we would play football, guys would stand in the balcony, taking off a few minutes from work and watch the game. So, auto work was just sort of just stitched into the fabric of the town.
Yeah. Are you live in Chicago now?
Yes, I do.
And when did you move here?
Let's see. 1995. Although the first place I lived in Illinois was in Decatur.
So I was
a downstater before I was ever a Chicagoan. Okay. So that's where I picked up a lot of the things that I included in my downstate dictionary. I have several specifically Decatur terms in here.
Yeah.
And I want to mention that if you read the article, I did discover that there is one error in there. I talked about Jim Edgar, how he scrubbed his Midland accent, but apparently he calls the nation's capital Washington.
Yeah. Well, you know what? My mother, Edward, to this day, says Warsh, and she grew up downstate Illinois on a farm.
Oh well, my dad's wife grew up in Granite City, and she says Warsh.
Yeah, it's really crazy. What it's really kind of crazy because it's and there are very specific things. And of course, you wrote a whole the whole downstate Illinois dictionary. What was it about What was it about downstate Illinois that fascinated you so much to write about the way people talk down there?
Well, probably because it's so different from Chicago. You know, it's just a completely different accent, a completely different, dialect region. You know, Chicago is what you call the Inland North region, which is the accent is derived from Western New York. You know, you go to Rochester and Buffalo, everybody talks exactly like they talk in Chicago, and ultimately from New England. And then Central Illinois is in what you call the Midland region. So it's like, Indiana, Ohio, Pennsylvania, kind of going all the way back to Baltimore and Philadelphia. So they, there were different patterns of westward migration to the two parts of the state, and they produced totally different accents.
So what are some of the, besides Warsh or Washington, as you would say, what are some of the other ones that pop out at you? Because every time my mom says Warsh, I just go, Mom, it's Wash.
Well, one thing I noticed when I moved to Decatur was people would use any more at the beginning of a sentence. You know, they'd say, any more, it's just too dangerous to go downtown.
Yeah.
Which would mean nowadays. And that's a feature that they call positive anymore.
Yeah.
And that's by the way
how you open the article is with a piece. But people can see this at chicagomag.com. It appeared in Chicago Magazine. But go ahead.
And then, the way they say the name of the state, they'll call it Illinois.
Yeah.
and then they'll talk about they drink milk.
Yeah.
Those were definitely some things I noticed that I'd never heard in the upper Midwest.
Now, so this, when you were in Decatur, was that when the whole idea to write about this language hit you?
No, it actually came much, much later, but I was able to draw on the fact that, I lived all over the Midwest to work on this book.
Okay. Well, let's talk a little bit about the article here, the Downstate Illinois Dictionary. You've got some specific ones that you've got here. You just mentioned milk in Illinois.
Right.
As opposed to milk in Illinois. Tell everybody what American Bottom is. I love this one. What's American Bottom?
Yeah, it's not the name of a Grand Funk Railroad album. a fertile floodplain on the eastern bank of the Mississippi River from Alton to Kaskaskia. The region got its name after the War of Independence when Americans began colonizing the area and wanted to distinguish themselves from the Spanish territory across the river. So it's kind of the equivalent of what you call Metro East now.
Yeah. And the next one that you've got here in the dictionary ties in with that. That's Below the Hill, which is another
right.
one. It's another one that I love. That's a great one.
Right. Yeah. Metro East cities west of the ridge that forms the American bottom, including East St. Louis. And I think it's kind of maybe a euphemism for the African American communities.
Yeah.
In that part of the state.
Yeah, Below the Hill.
I remember Alan Dixon, the former senator. I he sent me a copy of his memoirs, and he talked about going after the vote below the hill because, you know, he's from that part of the state.
Yeah. And what else? What about Burgoo? I've heard this
Burgoo.
One. Yeah, I've heard this.
I've heard this. I've never eaten it because, I guess real Burgoo includes squirrel.
Yeah.
And I've never tried this, and we'll talk about other things I've been afraid to eat when we get to the sandwiches. A pioneer stew originally made with squirrel, venison, whatever vegetables the prairie's first European settlers could grow. Every October, Utica holds a Burgoo festival, and it's still legal to kill a squirrel and eat it, but not to serve it to somebody else.
So you can you can eat it yourself. You can kill a squirrel and eat it.
Yes, you can make your own homebrew Burgoo.
Right.
But I don't think you're going to get squirrel Burgoo at the Burgoo Festival in Utica.
Yeah, it's no wonder you wrote an entire book about being Midwestern, man. I didn't realize how weird it was to be Midwestern or to be downstate.
Yeah, well, Midwestern kitsch, that's... that's my wheelhouse.
Yeah. All right, I love this. Carbondale, as opposed to Carbondale. Carbondale.
Yeah, that's like kind of the faux pretentious pronunciation. It's like calling Target Tarjay.
Right. You know what? One of the things here that I love is this course in Chicago, or at least, is sort of the selective. How we are selective about how we pronounce things. Like Illinois is Illinois, but Des Plaines is Des Plaines.
Right.
You know, which I always thought was, which is kind of weird. They just pick and choose which ones they're going to pronounce like with the French way, or just say, nah, it's Des Plaines. It's not.
Right.
It's not. Yeah.
Because I'm sure if the British had gotten here first, Illinois would have a Y at the end of it.
Yeah.
It's a French spelling. Yeah, exactly.
All right. Cheese toasty.
That's a grilled cheese sandwich, but only in Decatur. It's specifically Decatur term.
Yeah. F County, and that's
Effingham County, which includes a town called Teutopolis, which everybody just calls T-Town.
Yeah. And then, of course, we're getting to more sandwiches. Now, this one I've tried. This is the horseshoe.
The horseshoe, yes. Yeah. Yes, this is like open-faced sandwich of ham, turkey, or hamburger on two slices of toast, covered with French fries and smothered in cheese sauce. Now, the place that used to be the place to get the horseshoe is a place called Norb Andy's. And that's, I guess, since closed.
Okay.
And you can also, you can get a pretty, I didn't really see that much in Decatur, although there's a diner in Champaign, and maybe you know it. I don't know, did you go to U of I?
I went there to drink.
Oh, you went there to drink.
Yeah,
I visited the diner where everybody would go when they were really... Oh, Mary Ann's.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah,
yes.
Where everybody would go when they were drunk at 3 in the morning.
Yes.
Yeah, they serve the horseshoe.
All right, let me jump to another one here before we break, because we have to break.
Right.
I love the smell of money. Tell everybody about this one. This is a great
one. Oh, yeah, well, this is like, I noticed this in Decatur. When I would live there, I live right between the Staley and the ADM plant, and I was constantly inhaling the odor of roasting corn and soybeans, and actually so much so that I got so sick I couldn't swallow solid food for a week and had to live on Carnation Instant breakfast drinks and lost like 20 pounds.
Oh, man.
But if you mention it, they'll say, people get really defensive about it. They'll say, well, that smells like money to some people.
Yeah.
And then, they'll expect you to stop noticing it.
While you're drinking your Carnation Instant breakfast.
Right. Yeah. Well, we got to go to the one above it,
Yeah, okay.
Who knows where Shampoo Banana is?
Yeah, well, Shampoo Banana, no.
We were just talking about it. Yeah, Champagne Urbana.
Yeah, Shampoo Banana.
Right.
I don't know if I've ever heard that one before, but
it's a deep cut, but people do say it. when I've mentioned it to people from the area, they know what I'm talking about.
Oh, they know exactly what you're talking about. Okay. Mm-hmm. All right, Ted, hang on, man, okay?
All right.
Edward McClelland is with us. He's the author of How to Speak Midwestern, Folk Tales and Legends of the Midwest as well. We got a lot more to talk about. That was a piece that you could read, Downstate Illinois Dictionary. That's at chicagomag.com. When we come back, we're going to talk about a guide to very specific Midwestern sandwiches, and then we'll find out what Ted will and won't eat, so including squirrel. All right, we'll take a break here on 720 WGN.
Operator, put me through to Decatur.
Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN live in the Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago, here till 5 a.m. This is the anniversary, 50 years ago, the very first day of Woodstock began. So we're going to talk about that, plus we're going to talk about some of the greatest concerts of the last 50 years and open up the phone lines to some of the best concerts that you've ever seen in your life and maybe perhaps some of the worst and more. The phone number is 312-981-7200. For talk and text and your Triple Play Thursday request, it's one artist, three songs, 312-981-7200. My guest right now, we're having a conversation with Edward McClelland, who is the author of How to Speak Midwestern and Folk Tales and Legends of the Midwest. He's also written for the New York Times, Los Angeles Times, and currently writes some stuff for the Chicago Magazine, chicagomagazine.com, chicagomag.com. And let's welcome Ted back to the show. Ted, welcome back.
Yeah, you got to tell me the name of the song you were playing on the break about Decatur.
Yeah, that's from who's remind me who that is.
So that's Pork and the Havana Ducks.
Pork and Havana Ducks.
The only time I remember hearing Decatur mentioned the song was in, you remember the movie Bachelor Party with Tom Hanks?
Yeah.
He had this little line, "I'm not like the rest of the boys. I'm from Decatur, Illinois."
I don't make it rhyme. I don't remember that. And I've seen that
in Decatur. That one.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've seen that movie like 100 times, and it gives me an excuse.
Listen for it next time.
I will, absolutely. All right. So you also put together a guide to very specific Midwestern sandwiches. What inspired you to do this one?
That kind of came from the book too. I mean, I just took a drive when I was researching the book throughout the Midwest, and I was trying all the local delicacies. I mean, some people quibble with me, including Buffalo and Pittsburgh in the Midwest, but they speak with Midwestern accents there. So there you go.
That's what you went with.
Yeah, I mean, since it was a linguistic guide, that's what I. Yeah, so I would have things like the garbage plate in Rochester and things like we got a Getta in Cincinnati and the sugar cream pie and. In Indiana, and then some of the sandwiches, we're going to talk about here today.
We love talking about food and on this show, and I really love talking about dishes from different places. And this is right in my wheelhouse. I love this kind of stuff, man. All right,
go ahead. Yeah,
tell us about the Polish boy.
Okay, so that's like that's from Cleveland. Cleveland's hometown sandwich. It's kielbasa with coleslaw and French fries smothered in barbecue sauce. And supposedly the sandwich was invented by the owner of a barbecue joint because he just happened to have a lot of coleslaw, French fries, and barbecue sauce lying around his restaurant. So he just decided to put them all in one sandwich. So there you go.
All right.
And nobody else makes it, and nobody else eats it outside Cleveland.
Then that's just, I'll have to ask my Cleveland buddies about that. You know the one thing that I know that is specific to Cleveland is their stadium mustard. Which is the Burtman's Stadium mustard, which at one point you could only get at County Stadium in Cleveland, and it's the best mustard I've ever tasted.
Do they serve it at the Jake now?
They do, absolutely, and it's the mustard of Cleveland, and you can get it online now everywhere. That's the mustard that I use at home all the time. It's the best mustard I've ever tasted in my life. I would say
Cleveland, equals and possibly surpasses Chicago as an encased meat capital.
Absolutely. I mean, no question about it.
Have you been to the West Side Market?
Yes, I have. I mean, it's amazing.
Every every animal carcass they can stuff in a casing is hanging from the ceiling at the West Side Market.
It's a beautiful thing, man. It is a beautiful thing. Let's talk about the tenderloin. I have had this, and I love it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, pork fritter.
Yeah.
Bigger than the bun, trying to contain it, served in every Indiana diner and grill. And I guess it's a big thing in Iowa now, because I keep seeing videos of presidential candidates eating tenderloin sandwich. I think it was Kamala Harris, finally got her pork tenderloin the other day.
Yeah, no, it's funny. Well, first of all, it's always funny to see the presidential candidates just stuff their face in Iowa with anything that's deep fried. But yeah, the tenderloin, and man, you know, when you say that it's bigger than the bun, that's an understatement.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, we have a picture of it here.
Yeah, it's crazy.
You know, and I just saw a picture of my former alderman down at the state fair. He's having pork on a stick, so
it's pork
season.
Yeah, it is.
Although apparently there are a couple of vegan candidates, and they had a fried peanut butter and jelly sandwich.
Yeah, Cory Booker.
Cory Booker.
I saw Cory Booker chowing down on it. It was deep fried. He's a vegan, and I'm not sure how he got away with that, but he did.
And then you can get the breaded loin. That's extra cholesterol, fat, and categories. But you know, it's just a loin. They just call it a loin. That's it.
And they're really delicious. I've had them. They're really delicious.
Yeah, I had one in Peru in Cole Porter sometime.
Ah, there you go. How about the Bayport fish sandwich?
Well, that's only in Bayport, Michigan, and every summer in the first weekend of August, we just missed it. The Bayport Fish Sandwich Festival, and it has its roots in a stand that sold fish sandwiches to travelers for 25 cents. And at first they used herring, but when that became scarce, they switched to mullet. So it's a mullet sandwich is your classic Bayport fish sandwich.
All right. How about a brain sandwich?
Now, that's the one I didn't try.
Right.
I mean, can anybody blame me? deep-fried calves' brains on rye bread. I mean, I just didn't have the guts to do that one.
Yeah, and that's
that just seems like I mean, even though it's not human, I would have felt like Hannibal Lecter.
Yeah,
And widely enjoyed when St. Louis was a slaughterhouse town. Now only served in a few taverns. There's a place called Shotzi's Bar and Grill. That's one of their specialties. But they switched to pig brains after the mad cow scare. So you're not even really getting the original brain sandwich.
Got it. All right.
So it's kind of a faded tradition.
So we're hitting St. Louis again with anything with Prevel in it.
Yeah, you know, I had never heard of Prevel before I started, you know, researching this book, but it's this, you know, processed cheese of cheddar, Swiss, and provolone, and they make a lot of pizza with that.
Yeah, they do.
So it's kind of it's got a buttery taste and a gooey, greasy Chester. So I texture. I mean, I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing this right. Maybe you can help me because you're Italian. Salsiccia, a sandwich with Prevel, pepperoncini, and pickles, with meat sauce on a sesame seed bun, and then there's a Prosperity sandwich, which is an open-faced toasted garlic bread topped with roast beef and Prevel, and a Gerber sandwich, which is an open-faced toasted hoagie with garlic, butter, ham, and Prevel.
Yeah.
I think I had the first one.
We were talking about Prevel here on the show when we were talking about specific pizza, and someone from St. Louis said it's Prevel, and then somebody listening sent us like a big box full of Prevel. And
sweet.
And it's really good cheese, man. It's really tasty stuff.
Yeah.
And we're still not out of St. Louis. Now, this one sounds weird to me. This next one sounds weird to me, but I would eat it. There's no question that I would eat it.
And I ate it. The St. Paul sandwich.
Yeah.
Egg foo young patty, lettuce, pickle, and mayonnaise on white bread. And you can get it in Chinese takeouts.
It's like all
Chinese food mixed up between two slices of white bread. So that's a super American delicacy.
Yeah, no, that sounds fantastic. That sounds fantastic. Yeah. Now the next one,
I thought it was pretty disgusting.
Yeah. Oh, did you? I don't know. Okay, probably is. But now the next one I've had. This place is legendary. It's in Pittsburgh.
Oh man, it's fantastic.
Yeah, it's one of the best. Tell everybody about this one.
The Primanti sandwich.
Yeah,
a sandwich with coleslaw, tomato, French fries, and your choice of meat between slices of Italian bread. I had pastrami, and they said the hamburger is most popular, but I think if you get this, you got to have the pastrami.
Yeah. I had the hamburger when I had the
okay. Remember. Well, go back because okay. I don't think this is outside the Pittsburgh area.
No. You got to go there to eat the sandwich, and they're huge too. They're huge.
Right.
We're running out of time here a little bit. We know about the loose meat sandwich. And of course the Italian beef you mentioned here. Of course that's a daily.
Right. Yeah.
Now what was another one that you wouldn't try? Is there another one that you wouldn't try?
No, I think the brain was the only one.
Okay. All right. And what was your out of all of the ones that you tried out of the sandwiches in the Midwest, which one was your favorite?
You know, probably the beef on weck, you know, I don't know why, you know, buffalo wings are a nationwide thing, but that's not the best thing out of Buffalo. The best thing out of Buffalo is this beef on weck sandwich. And it's, you know, kind of soggy, rare roast beef inside this Kaiser roll studded with pretzel salt and caraway seed with horseradish sauce, so it's kind of like sweet and salty and pungent all at the same time. Buffalo was a big beer town, so this made people thirsty.
That sounds fantastic. Now the two books that we're talking about, How to Speak Midwestern and Folk Tales and Legends of the Midwest, are they all available?
Yeah, they're both from Bell Publishing, and you can get them from Amazon, and you can probably get them in some local bookstores too.
Okay. The next time we have you on, let's dive into the folk tales and legends of the Midwest, because I'm sure there's a lot of weird stuff that.
Sure. We can talk all about Resurrection Mary.
Oh well, we've mentioned Resurrection Mary right around Halloween time. Resurrection Mary becomes a staple. So why don't we have you back in October, Ted?
Okay, cool. That'd be fantastic.
Okay, cool. So, and you got a website people can get some stuff or info?
www.edwardmcclelland.com, McClelland.
All right, edwardmcclelland.com for all the information. Lots of fun talking to you, man. We'll talk to you,
closer to
Halloween. Cool?
Okay, great. Talk to you then.
There you go. Edward McClelland, everybody. How to Speak Midwestern and Folk Tales and Legends of the Midwest, available from Bell Publishing. Lots of entertaining stuff. And those two articles that we were specifically talking about, the sandwiches and the language in the Midwest, those are available, and you can read those at chicagomag.com, the Chicago Magazine website. All right, we're going to take a break here on 720 WGN, and we will return with the news. All right, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studio here until 5 a.m., and I'm your overnight dude every weekday morning, 1 a.m. to 5 a.m. It is Thursday. That means Triple Play Thursday. Yeah, man, Triple Play Thursday. And that is one artist, three songs, 312-981-7200. By the way, our text system is up and working, so if you would like to contribute via text, it is 312-981-7200, the same as the phone number. Who requested the Stones?
It's coming to us from John in Decatur.
John in Decatur. Join a little tumbling dice. So 312-981-7200 is the phone number and the text number. And we're going to be jumping into concerts. Today marks the 50th anniversary of the beginning of Woodstock. We were lucky enough to have Richard Pettengill in here a couple of weeks ago to talk about his experience. He actually went. He was 15 years old, and he's writing a book about it. He's almost done with it. He's writing a book about the days that he spent there and surrounding it and what it was like and the music and the impact that it made on his life. And today marks the 50th anniversary of the very first day of Woodstock. So then we're going to jump into the 50 greatest concerts of the last 50 years, written by a group of journalists who work for Rolling Stone. And I've got the article in front of me, and it's in chronological order. It's not like in order of, you know, what is the greatest concert of all time in the last 50 years, but they pick one concert from each year to represent the best concert of that year leading up to now. But I wanted to open up the phone lines and the text lines to you. What were some of the best concerts that you've ever seen? What are some of the most memorable live acts that you've ever seen? 312-981-7200 for talk and text. Text is up. Get it in there if you want. And tell us about your favorite concerts. Then maybe we can do worst concerts too. But best concerts or live shows and live bands that you've ever seen. 312-981-7200. So, August 15th, 1969, the Woodstock Music Festival opens on a patch of farmland in White Lake, which is a hamlet in upstate New York town of Bethel. Promoters John Roberts, Joel Rosenman, Artie Cornfield, and Michael Lang originally envisioned the festival as a way to raise funds to build a recording studio and rock and roll retreat near the town of Woodstock, New York. The longtime artist's colony was already a home base for Bob Dylan and other musicians. Despite their relative inexperience, the young promoters managed to sign a roster of top acts, including Jefferson Airplane, The Who, The Grateful Dead, Sly and the Family Stone, Janis Joplin, Jimi Hendrix, Creedence Clearwater Revival, and many, many more. Plans for the festival were on the verge of foundering, however, after both Woodstock and the nearby Wallkill denied permission to hold the event. Dairy farmer Max Yazger came to the rescue in the last minute, giving the promoters an access to his 600 acres of land in Bethel, some 50 miles from Woodstock. Early estimates of attendance increased from 50,000 to around 200,000, but by the time the gates opened on Friday, August 15th, there were more than 400,000 people who were clamoring to get in. Those without tickets simply walked through the gaps in the fences, and the organizers were eventually forced to make the event free of charge. And folk singer and guitarist Richie Havens kicked off the event with a three-hour set, and Joan Baez and Arlo Guthrie also performed on Friday night. Though Woodstock had left its promoters nearly bankrupt, their ownership of the film and recording rights more than compensated for the losses after the release of the hit documentary film in 1970. Later music fests inspired by Woodstock's success failed to live up to its standard, and the festival still stands as an example of America's 1960s youth counterculture at its very best. And I'm looking at the tickets here. They have the pictures of the tickets along with the article. The three-day ticket for August 15th, 16th, and 17th is $18 for a three-day ticket. So they also have they also have a $24 ticket as well. And it was $6 a day. So if you wanted to come for one day, it was $6. Started at 10 a.m. So you got tickets for Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. $6 a day back in 1969. So 50 years ago, you could see a three-day festival for $18, which included, obviously, some of the biggest acts of the time. And I remember, you know, in the 70s when I was young and going to concerts when I was a kid, that I think we paid, it was like, to see Kiss, I think it was maybe $5.50 or $6.50, $6.50, I'm saying. I remember Zeppelin was kind of a high-cost ticket. It was $8.50. So it was like, oh, Zeppelin can charge $8.50 for a ticket. But most of the concerts that I saw in the 70s did not top over $6.50. So,
meanwhile, I literally just paid like $125 for 2 days of Riot Fest.
Yeah.
So,
well, you could have gone if you get the DeLorean going again, you can go back in time and you can you can go to Woodstock for free. At one point, just people were walking
just,
in.
Yeah, just storm.
But if you bought a ticket, it was all 3 days were $18. So
that's absurd.
Yeah. Well, it was 50 years ago.
Yeah, that's true. So, I'd be curious how much is I'll see if I can find out how much $18 is in 2019 money.
$18 for a 3 day ticket. Or if you wanted to upgrade, you had a $24, $8 a day.
Ooh.
$8 a day. Which, you know, $8 a day was pretty expensive because I saw Zeppelin in 1975 and 1977. And I think they might have been $6.50 and $7.5. I know that at one point they were $8.50. And we were all like, wow, man, Zeppelin's cost a lot of money.
Wow. So get this. This is actually kind of crazy. So if in 1969, purchased an item for $18, you know how much that would be in 2019?
No idea.
$125.
Oh, well, there you
go.
So
really,
it's the same thing.
That's a 599% rate of inflation.
So $125. So basically, you're paying about what people paid. You're going to Riot Fest. How many days?
It's 2 days, though.
Oh, it's 2 days.
So
okay,
I think 3 days is $150. So okay, it's a little bit more expensive. But
all right, what's $24 in from 1969? What's $24 get you? How much is it now in 2019 money? What is $24?
$167. So
okay, so
we're about 3 day pass.
That's okay. So that's the, almost like the 3 day pass. So it's actually comparable.
Wow,
prices. You know, we all seem like, man, prices have gone sky high.
No.
But it's, you know, I mean, they have gone up, obviously, because you're not going to pay $24 for 3 days. There's no way you're going to pay $24 to go to Riot Fest for 3 days. Riot Fest is only 2 days. So, but there you go.
That's kind of eerie. That's almost exactly the same price.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it was funny because, you know, when Richard was giving us all his memories about being at Woodstock, which is just such an amazing thing that this guy was at Woodstock, and some of the other shows, we also, you know, the next time we have Richard in here, whenever his book comes out, Richard Pettengill, by the way, who is this incredible musician, great guitarist, who is a Chicago guy, teaches and works over at the Old Town School of Folk, appears a lot in the bands of Great Moments and Vinyl with Lindsey Cochran and other incredibly talented musicians who have either are associated with or have come out of the Old Town School of Folk or just work in the Chicago music scene. I've had the pleasure of having these people in the studio many, many times. I've had some of the best musicians in Chicago pass through these doors. And Richard is definitely one of them. He's an incredible guitarist, an incredible musician. And 15 years old, like I said, he was at Woodstock, and he was recounting firsthand some of the stories. Now, he did sleep through a good stretch of the pretty good stretch of the concert. He missed, I think, three or four really major acts because he was just worn out from being outside and in the mud and walking around, and, you know, and he did say that, like, he was caked in mud, as was everybody. And if you've seen the film, you know, like, if you've seen the documentary, you know that that, you know, the weather was pretty miserable for a little while there, and as a result, there was mud everywhere. But people didn't care. People didn't care. I mean, it was a whole different way of life, and obviously, the whole quote unquote hippie culture was at its height right there, and it was the summer of love and peace and all that stuff. But yeah, I can't imagine how miserable some of it must have been to just be out there and caked in mud for 3 days. You know, people sleeping in vans or in tents or just in the mud alone. Richard told us that they had a camper. They got there a day and a half early before the fest started, and they got a nice spot just on the hill above a pretty good walk to the stage. And I really wasn't aware that Richie Havens played for 3 hours until Richard told me that. Until Pettengill was like, nobody's here yet, so you got to keep playing. Richie Havens had to play for 3 hours. This one guy on stage, it was just Richie Havens and a guitar. Could you imagine that? Could you imagine having guitar, hundreds of thousands of people in front of you, and you've got to do 3 hours? You have to hold the stage for 3 hours?
That's terrifying.
Yeah, I'm sure he repeated songs. I think Richard said he did.
I mean, you have to.
You can't do 3 hours.
I mean, you could probably go into some pretty sweet jams if you want. I would just start getting experimental. Just gonna be like,
and in front of that crowd, you could,
yeah,
because they were getting experimental with the drugs that they were taking.
Here, so. Eat this paper; you'll feel weird.
Yeah. So, all right. I bet some people were so stoned that they were probably like, "Man, it felt like Richie Havens played for 3 hours. Man, I bet it was like 20 minutes." No, it was 3 hours.
Yeah, 3 hours.
It was 3 hours. All right, we got some people who are calling in. Our text lines are working, so get in here now. I'm going to talk about some of the greatest concerts of the last 50 years. This is according to the journalist at Rolling Stone, and it's in chronological order. So we're going to go through what these guys thought. And I want to hear from you guys. Talk or text at 312-981-7200. What was the best concert you ever saw, or the best live acts that you've ever seen? And we'll get to your talk and your texts right after this on 720 WGN.
Well, you've got your diamond, and you've got your pretty clothes, and the chauffeur drives your car. You let everybody know, but don't.
So, oddly, used to fantastic effect. in Shoot the Moon.
This keeps coming up.
I think it's a sign that you need to watch that movie immediately.
The universe and Nick DiGilio are telling me to watch Shoot the Moon.
That's right. One of the greatest movies ever. Triple Play Thursday. Yeah, man, Triple Play Thursday! And that's The Stones. We'll hear one more. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. And it's Nick DiGilio here. Coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Okay, today marks the 50th anniversary of the first day, the beginning of the three-day festival of Woodstock, 50 years ago. We're also going to be going through the 50 concerts, best concerts of the last 50 years. One concert is Rolling Stone, the folks at Rolling Stone picked one concert per year, and not like the best of all time. But I want to hear from you guys. What are your favorite concerts? What was the best live band you've ever seen? And so some of the most memorable live performances you've seen. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. 312-981-7200. 6330 area code says, my all-time favorite concert, Bruce Springsteen, 1981, at Rosemont Horizons. Tickets were $12.50. I had front row seats, and I swear he played for over 3 hours. That's the thing about, the thing that everybody talks about Bruce Springsteen, that he always plays for like 3 hours. He's out there, and he plays for, you know, he'll play for 3 hours. And I'm not a Springsteen fan. I know I'm in the minority, and I know people, you know, think I'm nuts. Not a fan of Springsteen. Never have been. And I like a couple of songs by him, but, you know, like, it's not my scene, and I'm not a fan. And people, like, every time I say I'm not a fan of Springsteen, the first reaction is, what's wrong with you? And I'm like, I just don't like Bruce Springsteen.
You don't like songs about turnpikes?
And no. And then they immediately go, well, you know why you don't like him? Because you've never seen him live. If you've seen him live, you'd love him. He plays for like 3 hours. It's fantastic. And I'm like, well, let me ask you this question. Does he play Bruce Springsteen songs? Yeah. Well, then how am I going to like him? I don't care if he plays for 3 hours. In fact, I'd probably dislike it because he's going to play Bruce Springsteen songs for 3 hours. Well, you don't understand. You've never seen him live. No, okay. If he comes out and plays some Sabbath for 3 hours, that's fine. I'll probably enjoy that. But if he comes out and plays his own songs, I'm not going to like it very much. Lots of texts coming in. Lots of people have gone to concerts. What are your favorite ones? And we will talk about Rolling Stones choices for great concerts for each year going back 50. Here's Rob on WGN. Hey, Rob.
Morning, Nicholas.
Morning.
I talked to you once before. There's the Thirsty Whale.
Thirsty Whale, of course, yeah.
Yeah, well, I saw Santana there in 75, but in 78, I went out to California to pick up some goodies to bring back to Chicago, and I didn't leave there for about a year, but there's a little place up, it's called Rollback Inn.
Okay.
And it's about the same size as a Thirsty Whale, and I saw the Doobie Brothers play there the very next night. ELO played there.
Wow.
2 days later, you know, you had Crosby, Stills, Nash and Young. Genesis came through there, and it's a little venue just like the Thirsty Whale.
Yeah.
And when you're one-on-one with a band like that, when there's only 50, 60 people
it's
epic.
Oh, it's amazing. It's amazing to have seen, like, a major act in a small venue. I went to the Whale a bunch of times. I never saw any big acts at the Whale. I was there during the heyday in the 80s when it was, I saw Enough is Enough there like 7 times. And a couple of other bands that have gone on to somewhat success, but nothing as big as what you're talking about.
And again, you know, I went there in 74. I was 14 years old.
Yeah.
So I wasn't even allowed in there.
Yeah,
but, you know,
absolutely.
They didn't care back then. It was the 70s.
Exactly.
That's what was so fun about it. I mean, the bands that you could see in the 70s, if you think about it, those bands, even today, are living off of what they created in the late 70s,
early 80s. Absolutely. Yeah, and they're living off of the money I spent on them, too. All right, Rob, thanks. Thanks, buddy.
Take care,
man.
Mate.
All right, buddy. Here's Jay on WGN. Hi, Jay.
Hey, Nick. How's it going, buddy? I like your topic tonight. I'm wanting to tell you about Cher. She performed at the United Center in Chicago back in 1994. Her first farewell tour, she rode in on an elephant.
Right. Yes, I remember people telling me about that, Cher riding in on an elephant.
Yeah, Cher wrote in the very opening song, Gypsies, Tramps, and Thieves. She rode in on an elephant. She was dressed like a gypsy.
Yeah.
And I'll just never forget that. I had $250 tickets. I was right up front.
Right.
And I thought I was going to drop off the end of the stage into my lap.
Yeah, you don't want an elephant to drop off of it. You know, and that's really hard for me to believe that Cher would be that theatrical. That's really difficult for me to comprehend.
Well, you know, 95 was a crazy year, man.
Yeah, it was nuts. It was nuts, man.
Clinton was president, man.
Yeah. Jay, thank you for the call, my friend. I appreciate it. Cher riding out on an elephant. I've told you the story about my friend Scott Oaken going to see Ted Nugent.
Yeah. That's a buffalo.
House of
right?
Blues, and you didn't think you were going to see an effing buffalo, did you?
Motor City Madhouse.
Your mayor said I couldn't have machine gun turrets, but I said, F you. And he had machine gun turrets on top of his stacks, on top of his amps. Came out on a buffalo. Buffalo goes backstage. He does a whole set. Encore. They bring the buffalo back out. So, of course, my favorite image is, because I've been backstage at House of Blues, and it's not that big. Now, the backstage area, not that big. I'm just picturing this frustrated buffalo standing backstage waiting for the encore going, what the hell am I doing here? I was in a field. I was eating grass. I was running around with my friends, and now I'm standing backstage with this jackass Ted Nugent riding me. And I'm standing back here. Some guy, and he had to bring a dude out with a mop because the buffalo's just going all over the stage. And Scott,
I'm just going to go right
Scott
here.
Said it was the funniest thing he'd ever seen. Like, when he came out, he said it was just the most ridiculous thing he's ever seen in his life.
You didn't think you were going to see an effing buffalo, did you?
Nugent. Moron.
I really wish that I had gone to the McHenry County Fair and saw Ted Nugent.
Ted Nugent.
I should have gone.
Yeah. I wonder if he came out on a buffalo, because that's an outdoor venue. So you can put the buffalo someplace, you know, normal, or at least someplace a little bit more suitable than backstage at House of Blues. All right, we got a break. 50th anniversary of the first day of Woodstock is today. So we're talking about great concerts from the past, great concerts from each great concert from 50 years going back. We got a ton of texts coming in at 312-981-7200. Phone lines are getting jammed up. What is the best concert that you've ever seen? 312-981-7200. News comes up right after this.
Angel, when will those clouds all disappear? Angel, where will it lead us?
All right, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Skyline Studio. Here till 5 a.m. It is Thursday, Triple Play Thursday. You made Triple Play Thursday. That was the third of the Triple Play of the Rolling Stones. So one artist, three songs, 312-981-7200. Welcome back. Yeah. So today, August 15th, marks the 50th anniversary of the very first day, the beginning of Woodstock. So we're going back in time and looking at some of the 50 greatest concerts from the last 50 years. Rolling Stone put together a list and their reasons why one concert per year going back 50. And I wanted to talk about some of the best concerts you've ever seen, some of your favorite shows. 312-981-7200 for talking text. Let's get through some of these texts and we'll jump on the phones. And if you want to join us, got a couple of phone lines open. Get your texts in too. Best shows you've ever seen, best live concert, 312-981-7200. 773 area code says, the best concert for me was my first Monsters of Rock. Yeah, man, Monsters of Rock! At Alpine Valley. Kingdom Come, Metallica, Dokken, Scorpions, and then finally, Van Halen. Ah, yes. Eddie says, the Mavericks are outstanding line. Granted, I was literally front row, but the lead singer is like a Cuban Roy Orbison. Pez 708 area code says, Amphitheater David Bowie. McCormick Place, Elton John, Chicago Theater, The Who, Alpine Valley, Joan Jett, Chicago Fest, Navy Pier. Yeah, Chicago Fest at Navy Pier. They had some pretty incredible shows. Chicago Fest, for people who don't know, if you weren't around at that time, Navy Pier used to be abandoned. There was nothing there. It was nothing. It was an old pier that nobody visited. You know, homeless people hung out there. There was really nothing there. And then, of course, now it's turned into the tourist spectacle that it is. But it was at one point, you know, like in the 70s, there was nothing. Nothing there. And so Mayor Byrne came up with this idea of Chicago Fest, where she was going to take this real estate that wasn't been used right on the lake there at Navy Pier, clean it up a little bit, throw a bunch of food tents in there, and have concerts on different stages. And so it was called Chicago Fest. That morphed into Taste of Chicago, and they moved it from there to Grant Park. But it originally became Chicago Fest. And I saw a bunch of live acts over at Chicago Fest. And it was there, through, I want to say Chicago Fest was there from 77, maybe 70, maybe the first Chicago Fest was 76 or 77, and it was at Navy Pier until I want to say 82 or 83, and then they moved it, they called it Taste of Chicago and moved it to Grant Park. But those early days in the late 70s, Chicago Fest had some pretty classic and ridiculous bands. The guy, I saw Journey there, and Rick Derringer opened for them. And this was before Escape came out. This was like, you know, and Rick Derringer, I remember Rick Derringer came out. And Rick Derringer, you know, played with Edgar Winter Group. He, you know, had a pretty successful solo career. But the only big hit he ever had was Rock and Roll Hoochie Coo.
Well, what about the Hulk theme, you know? I am a real American.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Rick Derringer is in that. Yeah, I thought for a second you were talking about the TV show The Hulk, The Incredible Hulk.
No.
Yeah, but the only hit, like rock and roll hit he ever had was Rock and Roll Hoochie Coo. Man, now I'm blanking on where that's played. Oh, it's Rock and Roll Hoochie Coo is played. I'm sorry, Dazed and Confused. I was going back to Dazed and Confused. It played in the Emporium with a series of setups of the guys shooting pool before. I believe that's before he's asked to go across the street, before Mitchie is asked to go across the street and get some beers. So. But anyway, but I remember he came out and he had no, I mean, there was no, like, he didn't have like a huge set list because he was Rick Derringer. So he did like a 17-minute version of Rock and Roll Hoochie Coo, you know, and we were all like, man, what? Just bring Journey out here and shut up. And so, and at one point, a dude came out, you know, like he's playing a guitar solo. Like Derringer's playing a guitar solo, and it wasn't a very good guitar solo. It was fine. But, it wasn't like, oh, my God, I've never seen anybody shred like this in my life. So he's playing this serviceable guitar solo at best. And a stagehand comes out with a big towel and starts waving him with the towel as though he needs to cool him off because he's sweating and working his ass off so hard with this incredible, incredible guitar solo. And I remember going, man, shut up. He was out there waving like he's James Brown. Like somebody had to come out and put a towel on him, you know, put a robe on him. It was the most ridiculous. I remember specifically as one of the most ridiculous things I've ever seen. Rick Derringer doing not a very good guitar solo during a 17-minute version of Rock and Roll Hoochie Coo and a stagehand coming out to cool him off with a towel. One of the stupidest things I've ever seen. All right, we got more texts coming in. Here's another one. Pearl Jam, Wrigley Field, 2013. 90-degree heat, a two-hour rain delay, but it was worth it to see Vedder rock the accordion and an appearance by Ernie Banks. Let me just put it to you this way. First of all, whenever you see Pearl Jam, it's a good show.
Yep.
I've never seen a bad Pearl Jam show. I've often seen incredible Pearl Jam shows. And let me just put it this way. If you're seeing them at Wrigley Field, it's great. Period. That's all there is to it. I did not see them at that show or on that tour, but I've seen them at Wrigley three times. And the three times I saw them at Wrigley, they were amazing. I've seen them at Soldier Field. I've seen Pearl Jam a lot. And they are one of the best live bands ever. One of the greatest live bands ever. And like, you know, some of the other bands that have this reputation of being like kind of a jam band, you get a different set every night. Like that's one of the reasons why I love Dave so much. You go three nights in a row, it's three completely different sets.
And they're all 3 hours long.
Exactly right. Here's Steve on WGN. Hey, Steve.
Nick,
yes.
How you doing?
All right, what's up?
Well, listening all this time, I was going to ask something about Woodstock, but I think I can drop that and go to a concert.
All right.
But it wasn't really a concert. It was the Wadena Pop Festival in Wadena, Iowa in 71.
Okay.
Johnny Winter, Chambers Brothers. I don't remember the other bands, but I just remember being there for 3 days. A friend of mine drove down to Chicago, and we went to get tickets for it, and I ended up driving out there with one of the promoters, and I was going to work putting up the fence and all that stuff. Well, I slept in the barn and did that for one half of a day, and that was enough for that work.
Yeah.
And met up with a bunch of my friends and just enjoyed the show. Got back to Chicago within the next month. Johnny Winter played at the lights were burned out, so it used to be, we used to call it the Rag On, because the A was burned out on the Aragon.
Well, you know, and, I don't know if you know this, Steve, but you know the Aragon's getting a new name.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It's who bought it?
Byline Bank.
It'll be now called the Byline Bank Aragon Ballroom. They've actually got a corporate name now, the Aragon.
Oh, sad. Brother.
I just can't believe that. I mean, that's the brawl room, man. It's always going to be the brawl room.
Yeah, it was. Well, when I went there, it was before they put all the nailed down seats in there.
Yeah,
and you used to sit up. On that little patio on the right side.
Yeah,
and when Johnny Winter played, there was so little security that myself and a bunch of friends, we ended up behind the band up on the stage watching them play from behind them.
Yeah,
and.
Those were the days, man.
Once in a while, there'd be somebody just a little bit over the top, and they'd be climbing across the side roof on the side, going across the roof up there.
Yeah,
inside. But the festival was that because during that time frame there was Wadena in Iowa. We had Kickapoo Creek, of course, down at Kickapoo.
Right.
Stevens Point up in northern Wisconsin. And at Stevens Point, there was a young guy there, and he managed to steal his brother's Air Force beeper. If his plane went down or something went down, it was an emergency beeper. And all of a sudden, there was a bunch of planes in that flying over this pop festival because this guy tripped off the beeper.
Oh, that's a great story. Yeah, it was a different time. Different time, man.
Those were hard to call them a concert.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
It was festivals after Woodstock. And,
yeah,
and that was the first few years when I got out of high school, and it was just me and the million buddies that I'm still friends with now 50 years later.
Yeah. All right, I got to run, Steve.
All right.
Thanks, buddy. Take care. Here's John on WGN. Hi, John.
Hi, Nick. How are you?
All right.
There were a bunch of bands that were advertised for the Woodstock concert. They were listed on the poster, and they didn't show up.
Mm-hmm.
Did you know the Moody Blues were scheduled?
Yeah, there were a lot of bands that were scheduled, but the weather was terrible. And they just, there was a deluge of rain for a good period of time, and that's when the bands were like, we're not going to play in this. Legendarily, the Grateful Night... The Grateful Dead. They got shocked. Their equipment was shocking them. It was the same thing with Jefferson Airplane. Lots of the bands got up there because the stage got soaked and their equipment was 1969 equipment, and they were getting shocked. Yeah. So a lot of bands were like, "Screw this, we're not showing up."
Yeah, the Jeff Beck Group was scheduled to play.
Yeah, yeah, those were
Iron Butterfly was scheduled to play. In fact, they were at the Port Authority and. They heard that the storm had hit and they didn't want to fly in because they thought it was dangerous.
Yeah, that's exactly one of the reasons why. But yeah, you're right, John. If people were to look at what the lineup was supposed to be, as incredible as the lineup was, there were still a ton of acts that didn't show up because of the weather or were no shows because of it. John, thanks for the call. 312-981-7200. Chris in Elk Grove says, I wish I had that DeLorean, but YouTube works too. In my opinion, one of the best concerts ever is Nirvana at the Reading Festival in 92, back when there was a rumor that Kurt overdosed at the festival. So he came out in a wheelchair and a hospital gown with Chris pushing him, and then they played an amazing set. Yeah, that's sort of a legendary. That's in this article. That's in this Rolling Stone article as the best concert in 1992.
That's one of my favorite live albums of all time.
Yeah.
I love it. Yeah.
1976 at Aragon Ballroom, Johnny Winter, which we were just talking about with one of our listeners. He played rock songs with an American Indian cat. They rocked like hell. 773 Eric Code says, favorite concert was Stevie Wonder, the Songs in the Key of Life tour at the United Center. Oh, that was just recently. This was one of the last concerts on the tour. Stevie was, all the singers and the band members were great. They had a great time. It lasted 3 hours when the backup band was great. All right. Man, tons of people are calling in, and we got texts flying in. And we've got this Rolling Stone article that we're talking about, the best 50 concerts of the last 50 years. Phone lines are open, 312-981-7200. Everybody hang on. We'll get to your text and your calls, and we'll get to the Rolling Stone list. What are the best concerts ever? What was the best live band, best concerts you've ever seen? Or if you've got some goofy concert stories or concerts that thought you thought were terrible, we'll take those too. 312-981-7200.
If you see me walking down the street, and I start to cry each time we meet. Walk on by. Walk on by. Make believe that you don't see the tears. Just let me grieve in private.
All right. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? It's Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. It's Thursday. That means Triple Play Thursday. You mean Triple Play Thursday. And who requested that?
It's coming to us from Bill, a little Dionne Warwick.
That's right. All right. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Welcome back. Nick DiGilio here. We're here until 5 a.m. And we're talking about great concerts. What are the best concerts you've ever seen? Today marks the 15th today marks the 50th anniversary of the very first day, the beginning of Woodstock. And I've got an article here about the 50 greatest concerts of the last 50 years put together by Rolling Stone, and we're going through that. But we actually haven't started going through that because we've been getting so many texts and so many phone calls at 312-981-7200 with people talking about and wanting to talk about their favorite concerts. So let's get back to that. Here's Linda on WGN. Hi, Linda.
Hi, how are you tonight?
All right.
You know, it's your fault that I'm up this late. I just love to listen to you.
I appreciate
that. Anyhow, I'm a country western, so I went to see Bill Anderson, Keep Your Money, Don't Bother.
Uh-huh.
Then I saw the Oak Ridge Boys.
Mm-hmm.
They were great. Then I went down to the Springfield Fair, and at that time you didn't have to pay to get in. And so I got there ahead of time, and they had an opening act, which was, at 13 years old, Tanya Tucker.
Oh, Tanya Tucker.
She opened for the, not the Oak Ridge, the other ones. I can't think of them now.
Yeah.
She opened up for another band, and they were both terrific, but she was really on a roll.
Yeah.
She came out in a dress with the can-cans underneath and the flat shoes, just like she was 13.
Yeah. Wow, she's 13 years old. I didn't know
she was really great.
I didn't know Tanya Tucker started that young.
Yeah, she did.
I didn't know.
And I also saw Alan Jackson in concert, too.
Okay.
And he was great.
All right. All right, Linda, thanks for the call.
Sure.
Take care. I remember Tanya Tucker. I remember when I was like 13. Man, she was hot. Not a big fan of that kind of music, but oof.
Yeah.
But yeah, I didn't know she started out that young.
That's, wow. You know, that's pretty young, but, you know.
Let's see. Scott from Streamwood said, great show tonight. One of my favorite concerts ever was SRV and Rick Derringer at the UIC. That SRV would be Stevie Ray Vaughan. Rick Derringer is now third time he's come up now. Rick Derringer.
Big night for Rick Derringer.
The biggest night he's had in years. Speaking of Stevie Ray Vaughan, I was lucky enough to see Stevie Ray Vaughan twice. Saw him at the old Holiday Star Theater in Maryville, which became Star Plaza, which I believe is now closed. A great, great venue, the old Holiday Star or Star Plaza, however you want to say it. Saw him there, and I saw him at the Aragon, one of the best shows I've ever seen.
I listen to Rude Mood all the time. Like, who plays guitar like that?
Nobody. He was incredible. And that show, I mean, the show at Star Plaza was great. There's no question about it. But I'm telling you, something was going on in the air the night I saw him at the Aragon. I mean, it was truly he was on fire. Mr. B says, my favorite concert was Pink Floyd Animals at County Stadium in Wisconsin. I saw that tour at Soldier Field. Giant pig floating above our heads, just like the album cover, just like Children of Men. And incredible show. Let's see, 708 area code says Brooks and Dunn with Alan Jackson. Brooks and Dunn were great. Alan Jackson was good, but he didn't really connect with the crowd. I saw Toby Keith, and he has one great song, I'll Never Smoke Weed with Willie Again. Yes, you will. 262 area code. I really need to hear Ted Nugent and Sammy Hagar in a debate club. Oh, yeah, that would be great.
I can't drive 55. I can't either on the effing Buffalo.
Bob Marley at Harvard Stadium in 1979. Tickets were $10, and Dick Gregory did an opening speech. Oh, that's pretty cool. That's pretty cool. 608 area code. I saw Queen in 1977 at the Chicago Stadium. See, anytime I hear somebody has seen Queen, if that was the same tour, 77 might have been the same tour where Thin Lizzy was opening for him. That's like the, I mean, I can't believe I didn't go to that show because I was going to tons of concerts at that time. Queen and Thin Lizzy. Can you imagine that? Thin Lizzy and Queen?
I literally can't imagine that.
I don't even know what to say, man. The Eagles in 1995 in Sacramento and Jonathan Brandmeier, where I had front row at Poplar Creek. Johnny in the leisure suits. Yeah, baby. I'm going to pull my pants down. Oh, Johnny. The Kickapoo Creek concert from 773 area code says it was held on Memorial Day weekend in 1970. It was comparable to Woodstock because it had a Butterfield Blues Band, it had Canned Heat, B.B. King, Country Joe and the Fish, and more. Sebastian in Germany. Hey, Sebastian in Germany. Thank you for listening, buddy. Hey, guys, my favorite concert experience was Marilyn Manson live in Frankfurt, Germany back in 2003. By the way, is there a way to get Nick's autograph? Love the show. Sebastian, give us your, I don't know why the hell you'd want my autograph, but give us your address over there in Germany?
Yeah.
I got stupid headshots. I can sign one of them. And they're stupid. They're old, too, by the way. They're old headshots. I haven't had a new headshot. No, we just took headshots.
We just did.
They're not available yet, so you're going to get an old one where I look like an idiot. Or I'll wait. I'll wait till we get the new headshot, Sebastian.
Yeah.
I'll sign one of those. I'm not sure why anybody would want one, but give us your address and I'll send them out.
Nick D, big in Germany.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's the only place I'm big. All right. That's going to show up on the show tomorrow. I just realized that after it came out of my mouth. I'm like, yeah, that's going to be on Straight Out of Context. I appreciate that. My own idiocy. All right, everybody hang on. Lots of people on the phone. People have gone to concerts, evidently. I haven't even gotten to this Rolling Stone. It was supposed to kick this topic was supposed to kick off while we were talking about this Rolling Stones article. Because of the amount of texts and calls that we're getting, I haven't even touched on the Rolling Stone article yet.
Too many good stories
there's
out there.
There's too many good stories. I bet everybody out there has a really great concert story, whether it's a goofy story or a fun story, great concert or a terrible concert. That's what we're talking about. It's in honor of the beginning of the 50th anniversary of Woodstock. All right. The news is coming up right after this.
I should ever go away. Well, then close your eyes and try. Feel the way we do today. And then you can remember. Keep smiling, keep shining, knowing you can always count on.
All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. And we're back here on a Thursday morning, Triple Play Thursday. Yeah, man, Triple Play Thursday. That's one artist, three songs. 312-981-7200 is the phone number and text number. Today marks the 50th anniversary of the first day of Woodstock. So we're going back in time and looking at some of the best concerts of all time. A bunch of texts coming in. We got a bunch of people on the line. We want to hear from you. Best concerts, best concert stories, that kind of stuff. 312-981-7200. Roosevelt is on WGN. Hi, Roosevelt.
Hey, Nick. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm going to rattle off a few of them because there's so many great concerts, especially in the mid-70s. Earth, Wind, and Fire at the old International Amphitheater.
Yeah, man. I would have killed to have seen them in their prime.
The original, yeah. Nick. Oh, God, the original Earth, Wind, and Fire.
Yeah.
World Series of Rock at Old Comiskey Park. Thin Lizzy, Molly Hatchet, Santana, Journey, and I think it was Eddie Money. I don't remember. I was so high.
Yeah. I think it was Eddie Money. I'm pretty sure. Because I went to the other one. I went to the other one that they did, the World Series of Rock at Comiskey. It was Pablo Cruz, Steve Miller, I can't remember who else, but the headliner was the Eagles, and my dad and I left during the Eagles.
We went to another one a few years later. Well, actually, there weren't that many, because that's what ruined Old Comiskey Park. And we've seen Flock of Seagulls at Old Comiskey Park. Flock of Seagulls.
Yeah. The Fix.
Ministry. And Police.
And Joan Jett.
And they were booing Joan Jett.
They booed Joan Jett off the stage. They booed Joan Jett
off the stage.
Yep.
And I was at that concert with Rick Derringer, Nick.
Oh, you were when they pulled out the towel?
Yeah, I was at that concert. and what I do remember about that concert is the security was horrible. There was no security. There was kids jumping on buses. It was ridiculous.
Yeah.
That's what I remember.
Yeah, that was. I don't know if that was the first Chicago Fest, but it was close to being one of the first.
No,
Chicago
it was the first.
Was it the first one? Yeah. Okay, that makes
from
sense.
From what I remember.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And then, can I say two more?
Yeah, yeah.
Stevie Ray Vaughan, when he was nobody had heard of him, and he played 25 minutes of Voodoo Child at the Band Show here in Chicago.
Oh man.
Yeah, and he opened, Jeff Beck opened up for him at U of I.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen that one. And the one that I do remember in the 90s was Alice Cooper and Steppenwolf opened up for Alice Cooper here at the racetrack.
I see. Oh, okay. Wow,
yeah.
That's amazing. All right, Roosevelt, lots of good memories, man.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, buddy, take care. Wow. You're great stuff. It's amazing when I hear callers call in and go, yeah, I was at that show, man. Like, we were all there. It's funny because that's, it's happened a lot. Like, I'll mention a concert that I've gone to or something, and somebody will call in and go, yeah, man, I was there. I remember that exact thing. It's hilarious.
It makes me wish I would go to more concerts, but it just gets so expensive.
Yeah, first of all, one, I'm too old. I'm just an old man, man. I'm just an old man trying to get some wedges. I can't do it anymore. And the amount of money that you have to spend at a concert. I mean, I'll go every once in a while. I'll make an exception. You know, like every once in a while, if it's not a huge, like I'm going to Madonna. There's no way I'm going to miss Madonna.
Well, and the Chicago Theater is a really nice place to go see it because people are not rowdy. They're sitting there the show.
Not only that, to see her, not at a gigantic stadium. To see her in a theater like the Chicago Theater, you can't pass that up. You know what I mean? You can't. And she's amazing live. She's unbelievable. 724 says the Sex Pistols' final concert 1978 was solid. Johnny Rotten was electrifying. He seemed to be electrified himself. Debris was constantly being launched at the band. The concert can be seen on YouTube. If you like their album Nevermind the Bullocks, then and you enjoyed the Blues Brothers perform Chicken Wire, then you'll like this performance. Yeah, people would spit on everybody and throw stuff. 312 area code Rush at the Aragon Ballroom 1977. Oh, I bet that was awesome.
I'll never forget seeing them in, what was it, like 2010.
Yeah.
It was just amazing at Summerfest at that big amphitheater.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I saw Rush a few times, one of which I've talked about several times as a guy puked on my leg. Sorry, dude, I lost it.
Let me buy you a beer.
Yeah, let me buy you a beer. I'm 15 years old, man. 608 area code says Queensryche Empire Tour. They played Operation Mindcrime straight through, and they filmed the DVD that night. I was there for that show. I also saw the Operation Mindcrime Tour, which was unbelievable. I saw Queensryche, man. I've seen Queensryche, man. I think I've seen Queensryche six times. Queensryche's one of the bands that I actually saw, one of the bands that became big that I actually saw at the Whale. Yeah, man, the Thirsty Whale, yeah! But yeah, I saw Queensryche. They were one of my favorite, 80s metal bands. I love those guys. I still love them. And Operation Mindcrime is a fantastic album. And I saw them on that tour. They did the entire album straight through. They did the same thing on the Empire tour, which was, I believe, a couple of years later. And what they did was the first set, they did like songs from their other records, like Rage for Order and Empire, and also Then they took a break and they came back and they did all of Mindcrime. Yeah, Queensrÿche's great. Jeff Tate is an amazing vocalist, heavy metal vocalist too. And then 608 area code, I had a front row for the Ramones. I went to see the Ramones in 1993. That was the only time, the first and only time I ever saw the Ramones. And by that point in 1993, like, at least one of them was dead. And I was like, I went in going, I got the tickets. I had a connection at the Riv at the time and at Jam. And me and a couple of friends went. And I had never seen them before, but it was like in 1993, I was like, man, I don't want to see these guys. They're probably, you know, they're old and it's going to, and they were unbelievable. The Ramones, they were unbelievable. And they played about 90 minutes, but they played like 60 songs because there was no stage banter, nothing. They'd finish the song, go 1, 2, 3, 4, and start the next song. It was truly one of the best shows I've ever seen. And I was like, ah, they're way past their prime. This is going to suck. But no, they were great. Here's Kevin on WGN. Hi, Kevin.
Yeah, hey, Nick.
Yeah, hey.
Yeah, so 1978, I went to see the Alice Cooper.
Oh, wow.
It was a Lace and Whiskey tour.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I must have been 13, 14 years old. My mom drops me off at the St. Paul Civic Center.
Yeah. Yeah, it's amazing.
Great show. He's jumping in and out of the screen. There's a big screen there. He'd jump into a mouth and it'd chew him up and spit him out.
Yeah. Well, he was Alice Cooper was one of the one of the very first theatrical people on stage. Like everybody talks about Kiss, but Alice Cooper was first. Alice Cooper did all that stuff before anybody did.
Yeah, the guillotine and all the
all
that stuff is really great.
Amazing. Amazing.
The end of the show. At the end of the show, somebody lit off a tear gas bomb, so then we're all hightailing it out of there. So
of
that
course.
Was my first concert I ever went to. It was
nice.
Very memorable.
And it ended with tear gas. Okay. All right, Kevin, thanks.
Yeah.
Yeah, you hear these stories of people who were not grown up in the 70s or knew about the 70s or went to shows in the 70s. Yeah, somebody blew off a tear gas bomb. Yeah, that was normal. That was normal. Like if, you know, like somebody had, oh, yeah, somebody just blew some tear gas off in the stadium. Okay. Okay, I understand. That doesn't sound strange to me at all. not back in 70s, man. There was no, like, sneaking a joint in the 70s either. People were blowing weed in the 70s. And you'd walk into it. I mean, I was like 10, 11, 12 years old going to these concerts. No question that I had a contact high. In fact, I would pass joints across. Like, they were very generous. In the 70s, people were very generous with their pot. And so, like, somebody would light up a joint and take a toke and then pass it to the person next to them and so on and so on and so on, and they would come back. People were very, very generous with their pot back then.
Yeah. I tend to avoid that.
I'd be sitting next to a guy. I'm, like, 11 years old or something. I'm sitting next to a guy. A guy's like, oh, let me pass this over to, like, my older cousin or my dad if he's there. And then my dad would take it and pass it to the next person. He wouldn't take a toke, but he'd pass it to the next person. But sometimes they'd be like, go ahead, little kid, take a toke. I'm like, no, it's all right.
I'm drug free.
Yeah. I'm sure that if they were like, you know, back in the 70s, like if I was in eighth grade, you know, at that time, I'm like 12, 13 years old. If they did like on the spot urine tests, I'd go right to prison. I'd go right to kid's jail.
Kid jail.
I'd go right to kid jail.
It's like regular jail,
but for kids.
For kids.
No, there's no question about it. I mean, I'm not kidding. You go to a concert in the 70s, and it was like going into a John Carpenter movie. It was like John Carpenter's release from 1980, which was a movie called The Fog. That's what it was like. You'd walk in and go, and it's all pot. People would bring rolls of toilet paper with them and throw them through the sky, beach balls, frisbees, at every show. It was pot smoke, toilet paper rolls being thrown, frisbees, balls, anything that people could find, they would throw. Back and forth throughout the entire concert until the band came on. Then now it's cell phones. People bust out their cell phones. But it would be, of course, obviously in the 70s, it was lighters. Do people still do lighters? Are there any old school people out there that go to concerts and bust out a lighter?
I mean, yeah, people tried to pull it off at ELO, but you kind of just look like a dummy.
Yeah.
And now it's just kind of like, really? It's a little bit passe.
Yeah.
But I appreciate the sentiment.
I remember the first time that there were excessive amounts of cell phones and not filming, but just cell phones used as lighters, you know, just to get the room lit up. Because, you know, some guys, you know, they would like that during a ballad. Like in the 70s, if you were seeing a hard rock band and they would do a ballad, they would bring the lighters out and go, all right, man, it's time to mellow out. Let's get the room lit. Here's Beth by Kiss. You know, they would do something like that. If it was a very hard rock or a metal band, and they would do a ballad, that's when the lighters would come out. But I remember going to see U2 on the Vertigo tour at the UC, and that was the first time when they started, it said, bring out your phones.
It'd be 2004-ish?
Five, 2005. I want to say 2005, spring of 2005. And that was the first time I ever saw like a stadium full of people taking out their cell phones. And this was before people were filming. This is 2005, so it was flip phones in 2005. So the screen would light up, and instead of people holding up their lighters, I remember U2 being the first band I ever saw that encouraged people to take out their phones and hold those up to light up the stadium instead of a lighter. And at that time, it was radical. It was like, wow. So... All right, we got a break here, and we've got the forecast coming up here, and we still haven't even gotten into the 50 greatest concerts from the last 50 years by Rolling Stone, because everybody who's listening right now, anybody, everywhere, has at least one great concert story or one great concert that they loved or hated, and that's what we're talking about. It's the 50th anniversary of Woodstock that started today, 50 years ago. So let's take a break. Everybody hang on. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. And we are live in the Skyline studio here until 5 o'clock. And, we're here until 5. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5. Coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Today marks the 50th anniversary of the beginning of Woodstock. And we also have this article from Rolling Stone about the 50 greatest concerts from the last 50 years, where they pick the best concert from each year all the way through. But we've got so many people who are calling in and texting in, sharing their memories of some of the great concerts that they've seen, some of the weird concert stories that they have, and memories and all that cool stuff. It's 312-981-7200. Here is Joe on WGN. Hi, Joe.
Hey, Nick. Great topic.
Thank you.
There is a couple small venues, Beginnings in Schaumburg.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Went there to see Cheap Trick, and Tom Petty was the first band, just came out with their first album.
Yeah. Yeah, Beginnings was one of those. Beginnings was kind of like, the Thirsty Whale. It was that kind of club. Mm-hmm. And you would look at the Illinois Entertainer. Like, you would scour the magazine, the free magazine.
Exactly.
Yeah, so, go through the Illinois Entertainer.
Yep. Haymakers and Wheeling.
Yeah, Haymakers, yeah.
Haymakers.
Yeah.
Saw Rick Derringer there, Haymakers.
So that's the fourth time Rick Derringer has been mentioned during this discussion.
He has to get the mention. As far as music goes, Stevie Ray, though, I was at the Holiday Star.
Man. I mean, unbelievable.
Alpine Valley and Summerfest, State Fair Park in Wisconsin,
mm-hmm.
with the Fabulous Thunderbirds, Allman Brothers there.
Yeah. Jeez, that's great stuff.
Park West, Lou Reed at the Park West.
Lou Reed at the Park West. Wow.
Saw him there. My beer on stage.
Wow, man. Wow.
Muddy Waters at the Park West.
Yeah, I've seen Muddy Waters. I've not seen Muddy Waters at the Park West, but I've seen him a few times, different places. Yeah. Wow. All right.
UFO, Aragon Ballroom, Love to Love. Excellent.
You saw UFO at the Aragon?
Yeah, Aragon or the amphitheater, or the other.
It was the amphitheater, because that's the Joe. That's where they recorded "Strangers in the Night." That's the show that where they recorded the live album "Strangers in the Night." It was at the amphitheater.
Yeah, was there, and that was excellent.
Yeah. Okay, Joe. Thanks.
Great topic.
Okay, thank you, buddy.
Great show.
Yep. I've told this story before, man. UFO is one of my favorite bands of all time, and my favorite live album of all time is UFO Strangers in the Night. Absolutely my favorite live album of all time. I had a ticket for the show where they recorded Strangers in the Night at the amphitheater here in Chicago. I had a ticket, and my parents wouldn't let me go because I only had 103 temperature. But I so wanted to go. I was so upset I missed it. I was so upset. You know, my friends go, all my high school buddies go, and they're talking about how great it was, and It was one of the best shows they've ever seen. And then the damn album comes out, and then I hear what I missed. And if you listen to Strangers in the Night, my opinion, best live album of all time. And UFO, I got to see them reunited with Schenker, everybody. In 1993, they did a reunion tour. We went both nights. They played the Vic both nights. We went both nights. They essentially just played Strangers in the Night. We didn't care. It was one of the best shows ever. Because they hadn't played together in a long, 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 long time. And that was the night, both nights that I went, I felt really bad for the opening act. I don't even remember who they were. Some band comes out and a bunch of knucklehead, beer-drinking, you know, white boys with long hair who have been waiting years for UFO and Michael Schenker to come out on stage just start screaming at these guys to get off the stage. And the lead singer was like, "Hey, man!" He started to talk back to the crowd. That's when the beer started to get flung up on stage. People just started screaming, "UFO! UFO! UFO!" It's like you didn't want to be the opening act for UFO with a crowd full of dudes. And it's all dudes. It's just all white dudes. Bunch of white, drunk dudes. Most of them long hair, wearing ripped up jeans and black t-shirts. That was the crowd that night. And they did not like the fact that they had to wait another 45-minute set to see UFO after the years of waiting. But here's the stupid thing. You start screaming and throwing beer and yelling. It didn't bring... The opening band left. I think they left after two songs. But that didn't make UFO come out. They weren't even in the building. They probably weren't even on their tour bus. They were probably at a bar somewhere or at a restaurant eating. They're not going to start early just because you boo the opening band off stage. That's not what happens. If you boo an opening band off the stage, you're still going to have to wait for the headliners to come on. It's not like the headliners are waiting backstage going, "Oh, they want us now. Okay, those guys are finished early. Let's go out." That's not how it works. So we waited another hour and 20 minutes for UFO to come out. By the time they came out, 90% of the crowd was plastered. Bunch of goofy white boy drunks who got even more lubricated on booze, waiting for the band to come out, not listening to anything. So by the time they came out, the entire crowd was chanting and screaming and yelling. So, but the show did kick ass. I will say that.
I think they're coming back around.
UFO?
Yeah.
Do you know if it's the original lineup?
I think
it's important.
I'm pretty sure it's the original lineup, and it's their last shows with the original lead singer.
So Phil Moog, yeah.
Yeah, I think it's with Phil.
That band is unbelievable. One of the greatest rock bands of all time. Okay. All right, let's break here. We got to hit the news here after we take a break here for the news.
Pretty woman walking down the street. Pretty woman, the kind I like to meet. Pretty woman,
welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Skyline Studio here, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. And yeah, so it is Thursday, Triple Play Thursday.
Give me Triple Play Thursday.
One artist, three songs. 312-981-7200. Who requested the Roy Orbison?
It's coming to us from our good friend Ike.
Ike, all right. That's not the 70s.
No, or the 80s.
The 80s. That's not the 80s. Well, it might end up. He might end up requesting some 80s. Because you had the Traveling Wilburys,
mm-hmm.
So there might be some 80s, but that's definitely not from the 80s. All right, welcome back. Nick DiGilio here. We are live in the Skyline Studio here, and we've been talking about your favorite concerts today. August 15th marks the first day, the beginning of Woodstock, 50 years ago. So we've been talking about some of your favorite concerts, and Rolling Stone put a piece together about the 50 greatest concerts from the last 50 years, where they took one concert per year and went through all the way. Got a bunch of texts. We'll get to those in a minute. Let's get back to the phones. Here's David on WGN. Hi, David.
Hey, Nick.
Yeah.
Huge UFO fan, by the way.
Oh, they're unbelievable.
I know it. Talk about it. Lights out in London, you know.
Yep.
Too hot to handle. Anyway, concert, tour, AC/DC, Highway to Hell tour.
Mm-hmm.
The big deal was Steve Gall, Teenage Radiation. This is revenge after Comiskey Park. Skylab, blowing up disco records. I couldn't believe it. It was awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, I mean,
them guys were too much, man. Steve Gall, Teenage Radiation.
Yeah, I remember them. I was at Disco Demolition.
It was too much.
It was insane. It was completely insane. As soon as everybody started running onto the field, my friends and my cousin and I got the hell out of there. We got out of there. It was completely insane. But Disco Demolition, yeah, that wasn't really a concert. It was a double-header baseball game that got ruined because they blew up the field. But yeah, those are some memories right there. Thanks, Dave. Appreciate it. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Here's Mike on WGNI. Mike.
Hey Nick, how you doing?
All right.
Great show. A lot of great memories.
Thank you.
1972 saw Pink Floyd at the amphitheater before they released Dark Side of the Moon. So can you imagine hearing Dark Side of the Moon for the first time?
Oh, that's amazing. That's incredible.
And their light show was incredible. I mean, it was just the four members, no pigs, no hundreds of musicians on stage. It was really something.
Yeah.
Another one, we had tickets in the afternoon for George Harrison at the stadium, and in the evening, Frank Zappa and some godforsaken gymnasium in Crystal Lake.
Wow.
That's quite a double feature.
Yeah, it is. That's really something right there. Yeah, that's amazing. Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, go ahead, Nick. Sorry.
No, go ahead.
One more quick story. You're talking about missing a show. My friends got me a ticket to Led Zeppelin in the early 70s. I had volunteered to take care of my two nephews, and the whole family was going out. I couldn't find a soul to take care of them. I was stuck. I missed the show. Not long after that, John Bonham died. I eventually saw the John Paul Jones and the rest of them, but I never let my nephews forget.
Yeah, I bet. I bet. Yeah, I was lucky enough. I saw Zeppelin twice. I was lucky enough to see him twice before. And I still have my ticket stub for the 1980 tour. That because you know I had a ticket and then Bonham died.
I had saved all my stubs. I was a deadhead. I'd see millions of concerts. I saved all my stubs, and then my mom threw them out.
No, you know, it's just yeah, of course,
like yeah. The baseball card collection.
Exactly,
you know?
Exactly. All right, Mike. Thanks, buddy.
All right, Nick. All right. Take care, buddy.
That's got to be amazing to see Pink Floyd and not know what Dark Side of the Moon is, and then they start playing Dark Side of the Moon. Be like, what is this?
What's the deal with all these clocks?
Man, oh man. Here's Big Ed on WGN. Hey, Ed.
Hey, Nick.
Hey.
I got two for you, best and worst.
All right.
The best one I saw, which I couldn't believe because I wasn't really into the group, was McCartney and Wings.
Oh, I love that band. I love that band. Yeah.
I told you once before, I saw them at the Capitol Center and ended up sitting next to a guy from Slickville.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, I know this story. I love that story. Yeah.
And the worst concert I saw by far was at the same place, Capitol Center, Frank Zappa and the Mothers.
Mm.
The Capitol Center had one of the first, had them overhead screen, you know, from the ceiling.
Right.
And this guy comes out, he goes, oh, you people are in for a treat. You're the first people to see this. And it was like a Gumby type, I don't know what the hell it was. But it played for an hour and a half. And we're sitting there, and this thing kept going on and on and on and on.
Yeah.
And then Zappa comes on, he plays for 45 minutes, and see you later.
That's ridiculous. That's ridiculous.
A complete ripoff.
Yeah.
It was a total ripoff.
Yeah. God, that's
when
funny.
He was out. I think the album is Overnight Sensation.
Yeah, that
know
sounds
that
about.
Album?
Yeah, I remember that album. Yeah, yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
All right. That sounds terrible.
It was. I was the worst. It was the worst.
All right. All right, Ed.
All right.
Thanks,
take care, buddy.
Take care, man.
Some Gumby.
Some Gumby animated stupid thing that goes on for an hour and a half.
Hey, man, I love Gumby.
I bet there were people in there who were tripping who were like, man, this is the greatest thing I've ever seen in my life.
Woo.
Yeah. Yeah, man.
Pass that lid.
This is unbelievable. Yeah, I'm trying to think of worst concerts that I've ever seen. Well, Zeppelin in 77, you know, one of the greatest bands of all time, one of the worst concerts I've ever seen.
Just completely lit up.
They were completely loaded. I mean, ridiculous.
Yeah.
I've said it before. Jimmy Page was on a folding chair for most of the show. Horrible.
I saw when I the only time I've seen Pearl Jam, and I'm going to remedy this. I'm going to try to go see them next time they're at Wrigley. But I saw them for Pearl Jam 20 up at Alpine.
Okay.
And the openers were Mudhoney, Queens of the Stone Age, The Strokes, and then Pearl Jam. Mudhoney was great.
Yeah.
Queens of the Stone Age were great. The Strokes were awful.
Well,
I could not believe, but like,
it's a weird choice to have those guys on.
Yeah, I don't get it. It's not really in the vibe. But at one point, you know, Eddie Vedder drinks like a bottle of wine
at least
before he goes out on stage.
Yeah.
And Julian Casablancas, the lead singer of the Strokes, was so bad that loaded Eddie Vedder had to come out and sing for him as Julian was just like, he just gave up. He's just like, well, Eddie Vedder's singing my song now, so I can't really interrupt him.
Yeah.
Just
no, it's Eddie Vedder's trademark is he comes out with at least one bottle of wine at the top of the show, big bottle of wine, and a notebook. He comes out with a notebook every show. And if he wants to, he just like, he's drinking, he just takes some notes. Like he brings out a notebook. And sometimes he'll call an audible because they'll write a set list. But sometimes he'll call an audible and just like yell at the guys and they change the song immediately
We're doing Bush Leaguer. Yeah.
So they're a great live band. As I said before, like Pearl Jam's one of the best live bands ever. Consistently. 773 area code sends in their text. If you want to jump in with your great concert stories or bad concert stories or Iggy Pop and the Ramones at the Aragon. I think it was 1992. Oh, man, I bet that was amazing. Never seen Iggy Pop. I've never seen Stooges or Iggy Pop. It's another band that I regret. Another artist I regret never seeing. Kurt says Red Hot Chili Peppers warm up bands were Pearl Jam, Smashing Pumpkins. It's October 17, 1991. I stood next to Rick Nielsen for the show, and he brought his son from Rockford. And there you go. Stevie Ray Vaughan, the night he died at Alpine Valley. Yeah, that was his very last show, was at Alpine Valley before the helicopter crash. Dave Matthews at Soldier Field and Wrigley Field. I've seen Dave Matthews at both of those venues a few times. 815 area code. How badass was John Carpenter at Dahlia Hill? Badass.
Dahlia Hall is a great venue.
Great venue. Love perfect it. Place to see Carpenter. That show was...
I'm still kicking myself.
It was so good.
My buddy won tickets and I couldn't go.
And
he had two tickets and I could have gone and I just couldn't.
They had the screens behind them, one above them, showing clips from the movie, from all the movies, while they were playing. And I got the VIP package. I went all out. I was like, I don't care. Got the VIP package.
You gotta.
It's John Carpenter, man. John Carpenter live in concert. One of my favorite shows ever. All right, everybody hang on. 312-981-7200 is the phone number on this, the 50th anniversary of the first day of Woodstock. We want to hear from you. Text or talk at 312-981-7200. Stockwell. That's what I think when I hear this song.
Somebody get this man a light bulb.
Yeah, Dean Stockwell. I love that after he finishes it, you know, he finishes it from Blue Velvet. Blue Velvet, by the way. Dean Stockwell singing, lip-syncing this song into a handheld like mechanic lamp light in the great Blue Velvet. My favorite is when this is done. And Dennis Hopper is composing himself because he just starts weeping during this performance. And then all the weirdos are there. And Brad Dourif is standing on a couch behind them. And a girl, some weird-looking girl who's just been hanging out in in Dean Stockwell's lair or whatever the hell it is, like climbs up on the couch with Brad Dourif, and this is in the back, the background of the shot. And all right, and he composes himself. Frank Booth composes himself. He's like, all right, let's go. He turns around, he looks, and he sees. He sees the girl with Brad Dourif on the couch, and he goes, hey, you want to come with Raymond? You go with Raymond. Let's go, Raymond. I think that's when you find out that Brad Dourif's character's name is Raymond. I don't, you know, you don't even know. You want to go with Raymond? Let's go with Raymond. I love that movie. Obviously.
Didn't Roy not like it?
Oh, no. And I don't think Bobby Vinton liked it either, that they used Blue Velvet. Yeah.
No. Yeah. I know Raj didn't like it.
Yeah.
I don't think either of them liked it, really.
No, they didn't. Roy, I sat next to Roy Leonard during Blue Velvet, and he hated every frame of it. He hated it so much.
God love him.
I, of course, thought it was brilliant.
Because it is, but, yeah. You know.
Yeah, but Roy was like, you really like that crap? And I was like, yeah, Roy. They didn't make Blue Velvet for Roy Leonard. That's all there was to it. This is the guy that retired because of There's Something About Mary. That's the reason that Roy Leonard retired.
To be fair, I also would have retired if I were in his position. I'd be like, oh, great.
I can't do this anymore. And, of course, I'm sitting next to him during screening of There's Something About Mary, laughing. And he just kind of looked at me with disgust. And that's why I got a part of his show. And that was in 1985. He retired in 1998, so that's years later. And the reason why he had me become part of his show was he's like, look, I'm tired of seeing crappy movies. You go see the ninja movies and the stupid horror movies. I'm tired of it. I don't need to see that anymore. And then he got tired of seeing movies in general, especially mainstream movies that were like There's Something About Mary. He's like, I can't. It was so funny. All right. We are talking about the best concerts of the past 50 years, and we want to hear your concert stories. Today is the 50th anniversary of the very first day of Woodstock. And we were going back and forth here on some texts and some phone calls at 312-981-7200. We got some phone lines open. If you got a great concert story or a concert story that involves a bad concert, any of that stuff, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Okay, 312 area code says, best concert I ever saw was the Three Tenors at Dodger Stadium in the 90s. We sat in the infield. The tickets were $500 a piece. Definitely worth every cent. Cleveland Tom said, my most memorable concert moment was a jam at a Phish show from last year, and it just finished. Oh, hold on a minute. Wait a second now. Hold on.
All right.
I'm not a big Phish fan, but I'd go see him at least once.
Yeah. Is Adam still here? Because Adam's like the biggest Phish fan in the world. Did you not know that Adam is a massive Phish fan? He's a huge Phish fan.
Really?
Yes, sir.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
I never would have guessed.
Huge.
Good for him.
Yeah.
Good for him. It's like how Krista's really into Tool.
Krista's really into Tool.
Yeah.
I would rather be into Tool than to Phish. I like Tool.
Tool's okay.
Oh, I like Tool.
I'll give them, like, there's 10 songs of theirs that I think are really great. So I think it's a win category for them. But
I also like Perfect Circle. I think Perfect Circle's a fantastic record. Fantastic record. Yeah. I am a fan of Maynard.
Yeah,
I'm saying that right now. I'm a fan of Maynard.
There's nothing like more Maynard than when he puts on the riot gear with the Starbucks logo.
Yeah.
It's very of a specific time and place.
It is.
And I'll give him 10,000 Days. What's that song?
Hey,
the Pot?
They just released a new record. Tool just released a brand new record.
No, they're in on it.
Yeah.
They're back. 13 years.
Yeah. All right. Here's Sam on WGN. Hey, Sam.
Hi, how's it going?
All right, what's up?
Oh. Elvis Presley in 73 and 74.
73
he was, right, he was in the arena up in Milwaukee.
Okay.
And two tickets or three tickets or whatever. My ex-wife, she got the tickets. We thought, oh, boy, well, we can't see nothing. We got the best seats in the house. They were on the inner wall, on the outside, and you could see straight down the aisle. And He performed right in front of us, Ashley. You could see there was nothing blocking our vision.
Oh, that's great.
The greatest stuff. And then 74 at the United Center, we had the mezzanine. We got the two front seats in the mezzanine looking down. Greatest concert you ever wanted to see.
Yeah, well, you were lucky. You were lucky to get to see Elvis. Not a lot of people got to see Elvis. Well, of a certain age, that's for sure. So
no, it was one of the greatest shows ever.
All right.
And one other thing I want to ask you about: have you talked to Patty Vasquez? Because the birthday is coming up.
I have not.
A birthday Saturday now. Remember,
okay.
That's my birthday.
Okay.
So.
All right, Sam. Thanks, buddy.
Okay.
Take care. All right, we got a break here. Then we'll come back after the news and talk more about great concerts. And I'm going to read a few of the choices that they made in Rolling Stone of some of the greatest concerts of the past 50 years on this, the anniversary of the first day of Woodstock.
Every time I look into your loving eyes, I see love that money just can't buy.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studio here until 5 a.m. 312-981-7200 was the phone number. Our final triple play is not going to be a triple play. It's going to be a single play because that's how it timed out. But that was our final triple play of Roy Orbison right there.
Yeah, man, triple play Thursday.
We'll do it again next Thursday. One artist, three songs, 312-981-7200. Today, August 15th, marks the 50th anniversary of the very first day of the Woodstock Festival in upstate New York. And so we've been talking about some of the best concerts that you've been to and some of the best bands. And I'm going to go through some of the choices that Rolling Stone made over the years for some of the best 50 best concerts of the past 50 years. So we're talking about your great concert stories, your bad concert stories, anything funny, best concerts you've ever seen, favorite live bands and all that stuff. 312-981-7200. Here is Ozzy on WGN. Hi, Ozzy.
Good morning. How are you?
All right. What's up?
Okay. As I was waiting, I just thought of something else. I was fortunate to go to the Bangladesh.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Concert. And Harrison, Clapton, Dylan, everybody on that one.
Yeah.
That's a pretty tough one to beat.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
And then that was some Marquette, and it was a Christmas Vacation. And then 3 years later, which would have been 75, the Eagles and Linda Ronstadt had a concert.
Mm.
And it was at Sportsman's or Hawthorne. And it was at one of the racetracks.
Okay.
And she started. And then she left and the Eagles came out. And then they both came out and finished everything up.
Yeah.
And those are the two best that I can remember. And I've been listening to it, you know, since 2 in the morning over here, and I'm like, I can think of something that's better than what I've heard so far.
Yeah, well, Bangladesh definitely is unbelievable that you were there. That's because we were talking about a friend of ours, Richard Pettengill, who has been a guest on the show many times. A couple of weeks ago, he was in, and he went to Woodstock. He was 15 years old, and he was at Woodstock, and he has unbelievable stories about being there.
Good for him.
Yeah.
God bless him.
All right.
I grew up on the North Shore. We almost went, and then the car broke down, and it said, you know what, we're staying in Highwood and Highland Park.
Yeah. All right.
All right, man.
All right, Ozzy. Take care, Buzzy. Buddy, take care.
You're good. You too, bud.
All right. Here are some of the choices that they made for years past in this Rolling Stone, some of the greatest concerts of the past 50 years. The Cream Farewell Tour. They burned out after 2 years. After 2 years, they were like, yeah. There were only three guys in the band, but they were like, no, we're done. I would have loved to have seen Cream. Oh, man.
Yeah.
They also positioned Johnny Cash at San Quentin, one of the greatest concerts of all time. Could you imagine seeing that?
Yeah. I wish I could have seen Johnny Cash in any capacity.
The biggest Ike and Tina Turner American tour. That came like around 1971. Led Zeppelin World Tour. They're talking about the first one here. They're going the first tour, which would be 1968-69. And on that tour is when they recorded Zeppelin II. So they hadn't even had, the second album wasn't even out yet. And it was one of their biggest tours. Black Sabbath's first American tour. They played the New York Fillmore East. I've seen Black Sabbath with both Ozzy and Dio. I saw him on the, I saw him with Dio on the Mob Rules tour at the amphitheater. It was great. Saw him with Ozzy at the, also at the amphitheater for the, right before he got kicked out of the band. It was for the Never Say Die tour. He was a mess. He was a complete mess. Neil Young and Crazy Horse, the Winter American tour of the early 70s. There's a, you know, I can't believe I haven't brought up Neil Young yet. That's, again, we're talking about consistent, amazing live performers. And that's one of those, I'm telling you, Neil Young is one of the best live performers of all time, whether he's by himself or whether he's with Crazy Horse or whoever he's, whatever band he's with. Pearl Jam backed him up on a band, backed him up, you know, not only on a tour, but on an album. Mirrorball, the album where Neil Young, the backup band was Pearl Jam, and that was one of the greatest, because, you know, Eddie Vedder says, look, without Neil Young, there'd be no Pearl Jam, there'd be no grunge. Because what a lot of people say it is grunge is, if people are like, well, how would you describe grunge? Neil Young plus Black Sabbath equals grunge.
Did you ever hear about the tour where Neil Young brought Sonic Youth on with him? That's ridiculous.
The thing about Neil Young is that he is, even as he ages, he's still cutting edge. He's still doing great stuff. He's still experimenting. I've seen Neil Young several times, and I've never been disappointed. Never, ever. I remember on the Harvest Moon tour, he did a tour for Harvest Moon, and it was just him on stage alone with, you know, guitars and instruments and an organ and stuff just on stage surrounding him. And he would wing it. It was a very quiet, intimate night, and he played two nights at the Chicago Theater. My buddy Mike and I went the second night. The first night, he got so angry with the crowd because they got loaded. They were really, really drunk, and they were screaming out songs, and they were being very obnoxious, that on the second night, he banned beer sales. So the night we went, we couldn't get a beer, but we were fine with that because
it's Neil Young.
You know, it's like he said, look, you're not going to yell. You're not going to scream. You're not going to be obnoxious. You're not going to be drunk. So no beer sales. He cut the set short on the first night. On the second night, he came out and did 2.5 hours, just him on stage. And then Mike and I had beer after the show, which is fine.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I'm remiss in not mentioning just how great a live performer, just how great Neil Young is in general. One of my favorite artists of all time. He's incredible. You ever seen him?
I wish.
Oh, man.
I've never had the chance to go see Neil Young. Yeah, I love Neil Young.
Incredible.
Love him.
Yeah. You ever seen anybody get booed off the stage?
Have I ever seen anyone get booed off the stage? No. The worst I've seen is just kind of general ambivalence.
Yeah.
Because most of the time, like, now I grew up in the age where people kind of had phones. So it's like if a band's really bad, the worst thing...
they just start talking and on the phone.
Yeah, that's the worst thing that can happen to you now, is that someone will literally stop watching what you're doing.
That's obnoxious, too.
It is.
It's not quite as bad as getting booed off the stage.
Oh, yeah, no. But
I've seen it 3 times.
Really?
3 times. As I mentioned before, whoever the opening act was, who unfortunately had to open up for UFO after like 10 years of not being around, they got booed off the stage both nights. We went both nights, and they got booed off the stage both nights. So I've seen it 3 times, or 4 times then, if you count same band both nights.
Yeah, that's a double.
That's a double. As I mentioned before, Joan Jett got booed off the stage at the Synchronicity kickoff tour at Comiskey.
That really grinds my gears.
Me too. Me too. I love Joan Jett. Joan Jett's awesome.
Yeah, she's
but
great.
You heard the lineup here.
Yeah.
And this was 1983 at the height of like new wavy stuff. So you got Ministry at that time sounding like Depeche Mode. You got Ministry, you got The Fix, you got the Flock of Seagulls, and you have the Police. And the odd woman out, unfortunately was Joan Jett, and people with their, you know, crazy, you know, 80s Flock of Seagulls hair. They started booing her, and she did about 20 minutes, close to a half an hour, but she did cut her set short because people were booing and they were not paying attention. They wanted people with funny haircuts out on stage.
It's just she could have kicked everyone's ass, and that's...
Well, she does. I mean, she rules. I've seen Joan Jett about three or four times, and she's fantastic. I saw her headline at the Metro. It was one of the best shows I've ever seen.
God, that's so good.
But then the other one who got put off the stage, Bon Jovi. Bon Jovi opened for the Scorpions. And this was when I was in high school, when the album Blackout came out. And the Scorpions were huge when I was in high school. They were huge, you know. So they hadn't, this was way before Slippery When Wet. This is way before they became, you know, the 80s hair metal band that everybody loved. The only hit they had at that time was, "Ooh, She's a Little Runaway." And it wasn't even that big a hit. It was just kind of getting airplay.
Right.
And they were not a good fit for Scorpions. And the Scorpion fans let them know it. This was at the Rosemont Horizon.
Yeah, they probably would have seemed like soft rock, really.
Oh, they did.
Comparison.
I mean, it was like, who the hell are these guys?
Are these the Doobie Brothers?
Yeah.
What is this? Which Doobie you be?
Yeah, which Doobie you be? Rerun up in front with his tape recorder. Here's Brent on WGN. Hi, Brent.
Hey, good morning, Nick.
Morning.
Best concert I ever seen. It was the greatest choice ever made. It was the same year that the Monsters of Rock come out. And me and one other friend went to Pink Floyd at Camp Randall. It was the greatest show I ever seen, and all the rest of our friends that went to Monsters of the Rock said it was terrible.
So you guys went to the right show.
Yeah, without a doubt.
Wow.
Watching a band get booed off the stage, they didn't really get booed off, but I watched Megadeth and Alpine Valley get sodded off the stage. until they left.
Yeah, whipping sod at people.
Classic Alpine Valley.
Great. Alpine Valley, of course. That's where you get the best sod. Right there. All right.
Right.
Brent, thanks, buddy.
One,
take care, man. Take care. All right. Let's take our final break here for weather. We got some texts to get to, best concerts. They mentioned Elton John at the Troubadour, Aretha Franklin at the Fillmore West, B.B. King at Cook County Jail. I bet that was unbelievable. Allman Brothers at Fillmore East. The Band at the Academy of Music. These are all considered some of the best bands or some of the best concerts of the last 50 years. And there are some incredible stories that are attached to it. Bob Dylan's Rolling Thunder Review North American Tour. Grateful Dead, their North American Tour 1977, which by many is considered the Dead's best tour. The Ramones' first European tour. I bet that was fun. The Eagles, 1976 U.S. tour for Hotel California. Bruce Springsteen and the E Street Band touring for Born to Run. They consider those are some of the best tours of all time. We got more texts coming in here. And 312-981-721, and we'll wrap it all up after we take another break for some weather here. Welcome back, everybody. Now I'm disappointed that we're not going to hear two more songs. Who requested that?
It's coming to us from Alex.
All right, Alex. 312-981-7200 is the phone number, and we are here until 5 a.m. Coming up at 5 is Steve Grzanich with the opening bell, and coming up at 6 is Steve Cochran in the gang with your morning drive, and I'll be joining Steve Cochran in the gang for my Thursday visit at 6:20 this morning. We'll preview the new movies and talk a little pop culture, as I do. Love doing being a part of the Cochran Show, and I'll be doing that a little bit later. And also coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Okay. Got some texts here. We'll go through those, and we'll go through a little bit more of Rolling Stones' thoughts on the 50 best concerts of the past 50 years on this, the 50th anniversary of the first day of Woodstock. It says... morning. Listen to you every day from Ireland. Oh, I love that place. Your show is great, especially when I'm homesick and missing Chicago. Best concerts, Madonna, 1987, Soldier Field, and Eurythmics, 1987, Poplar Creek. Still have the programs for both shows. I was at the Madonna show. I did not see Eurythmics at Poplar Creek. I saw Eurythmics twice, though, both times at the auditorium. First time I saw Eurythmics, and they're great. And I've seen Annie Lennox solo a couple of times, too. And obviously they're great because they're Eurythmics. But
duh,
the first time I saw them, you remember the band Real Life?
Yeah, actually.
Send Me an Angel.
Oh, jeez.
They opened for them, and they were great.
Oh, wow.
They were really great. Send Me an Angel was their only hit. I love that song. I was surprised at how good they are. I'd never heard of them before. Like, this was before Send Me an Angel came out. And Send Me an Angel, you know, became a moderate 80s hit.
Mm-hmm.
And, but yeah, so Real Life.
Yeah, we were brought up in our house to literally worship Eurythmics, specifically Annie Lennox.
Well, sure.
She's a great Scotswoman.
Yeah.
And, it's you can't even put into words how talented she is.
Born on Christmas.
Yeah.
Yeah. She is a lovely woman with an incredible voice. I couldn't have been happier when her, because Eurythmics has a very complicated past, you know, their relationship and all that stuff. And Dave Stewart is amazing. When she went solo, everybody was like, uh-oh. And when her solo album took off, I mean, like, really took off, you know, she got a whole new fan base. Interesting little tidbit. Almost every song that Demi Moore strips to in the movie Striptease is an Annie Lennox song. This is an interesting little tidbit for you.
Good for you, Demi.
Yeah. One of the few people on the planet that likes that movie. I like that movie. 773 area code says, one of the greatest concerts I saw was The Cult. After reading a review in the Sun-Times, I went back and bought a ticket at the door at the Aragon. I was blown away. They were so good. That night, I went out and bought Sonic. That was when Sonic Temple came out. I've seen The Cult a bunch of times.
I got picked on once because someone thought I listened to The Cult, and this was when I was in seventh grade. And I said, no, I don't listen to The Cult.
Why did they think that you listened to The Cult?
Because I was listening to The Cure.
It's a different band.
Well, yeah. No, they were just like, oh, man, that band sucks. Everybody hates The Cure. I was like, dude, no one hates The Cure. They're great. And he's like, well, play them again. And I played it. He's like, oh, this isn't what I was talking about. I was like, well, what band were you talking about? The Cult.
They don't sound
remotely the
same.
No,
they don't. And The Cult, by the way, is a great band.
The Cult are great.
The Cult is a great band.
I just don't know what 12-year-olds are talking about The Cult.
Yeah. Hip 12-year-olds at that time.
I guess so. It was really confusing.
Yeah, what was the name of the album? Because I know that Love was the first album I ever bought by The Cult, and then I went back and I got their earlier stuff. But the album with, like, Love Removal Machine on it.
Oh, jeez.
Wildflower.
Now you're
Yeah, look it up. Look it up. Because it is a great record. It's the best album AC/DC has never made. That's essentially what that album is. It's got Love Removal Machine on it. It's got Wildflower. It is a fantastic record. And then, like, two or three albums after that, they were all great.
Electric.
That's
yeah,
it.
Electric.
Best AC/DC album that AC/DC never made. So.
That's true.
630 area code. I loved Bryan Adams in 1986. Bryan Adams, that's the show, as I've mentioned before, where my friend Scott Oaken busted through three chairs. One during the Hooters, two during Bryan Adams. Legendary show. That, by the way, you know our old friend Chris Anderson, who comes in from time to time. Maybe you don't know Chris. Chris is a musician, and he is one of the guys who plays in the Warren Zevon birthday bash every year that they do. He's been in a bunch of bands, and he's a very talented guy. I love the guy. And he used to be a manager at Green Mill. So we've spent a significant amount of time together.
Yeah.
Chris, first concert, because I've had Chris on a bunch of times, first concert he ever went to was the Bryan Adams Hooters show. That was his first concert of all time, and he knows Scott very well. They've played in a band. They actually played in a band of a show I directed. I had a live band play with along with the show, and so Chris was on drums, and Scott played guitar, and he was the band leader.
Very cool.
And so he knows Scott, and then when I told him that story, he almost fell over.
Hooters.
Scott busted through three metal chairs. It's the best. It's one of my favorite stories of. It's one of the greatest stories of rocking out at a concert of all time. He was rocking so hard he busted through three metal chairs at a Hooters Bryan Adams show. You know, you would think, oh, it must have been Metallica or something, right? You say,
nah, man.
No, it was the Hooters and Bryan Adams.
Jeez. I wish I liked that. I wish I liked Bryan Adams that much.
Oh, you got. Well, you got.
I like
a little Bryan Adams.
I like a little Bryan Adams. Don't get me wrong.
Listen, man. one of the great albums of the 80s is Bryan Adams' Reckless.
Sure.
It's one of the classic albums of the 80s. I love that record. There's not a bad song on that record. I also leg Into the Fire, the follow-up that he mm-hmm. did, which I think is almost as good as Reckless. Those two albums back-to-back. And also Cuts Like a Knife.
Yeah.
The album before that.
Okay. But I'm just, you know...
I mean, I've never busted through two chairs. I was there that night, and the show was great, and I didn't bust through any chairs.
No.
Hey guys, best concert, Cheap Trick at the Metro. It was unreal. I went with my friend George and Billy. We went backstage and hung out with the band, partied with Rick and Bunny Carlos. Oh man, worst was a fifth grade concert. It was a fifth grade. I was forced to learn and play the trumpet, and I sucked. That's Tommy from Johnsburg. I again failed to mention during this discussion of concerts, Cheap Trick. I've seen Cheap Trick at least 20 times, and they've never been bad. They're as good as they are as now as they were in 77. And one of the greatest series of shows I ever saw in my life was they had a 4-night stand at the Metro. This was in 1998. This was right when Vinyl Shop opened, and a whole bunch of us from the cast and everything, we went. I went all 4 nights. They played a different album each night. They played the first album, the second, and then so on and so forth. And then Budokan was their final, was the night they did live at Budokan. Special guests every night. Billy Corgan came out. They had like special guests come. It was ridiculous. I went all 4 nights, and they released a live album compilation from it called Music for Hangovers. And if you look at the gatefold on the inside of the DVD or the CD and you open it up, you'll see me. I'm in the balcony. Kind of out of focus, but it's the picture is taken from on stage, from behind the band, and I am right by the spotlight, first person, right next to the spotlight in the balcony, hanging over, wearing a Schlitz shirt. We had really long hair at the time, and I was doing the devil horns.
Oh man! So even on the cover, it tells you it's the Metro sign.
Oh yeah! No! It was a full on Joe put. Shanahan, who runs the Metro, that was one of the greatest. He considers it one of the greatest four nights that they've ever done.
April 30th, Budokan.
Yeah.
May 1st, Cheap Trick. May 2nd, In Color.
Yeah.
May 3rd, Heaven Tonight.
Yeah. Went all 4 nights.
Wow.
Yeah. All 4 nights. And it was actually right before Vinyl Shop opened. We were in rehearsal because we opened up that show in May. Late. It was like mid May when we opened up that show.
That's insanity.
Yeah. So. All right. Okay. Well, there you go. There's some great concerts for you. That was fun.
Big.
Happy anniversary to all the Woodstock folks out there.
Yeah, man.
All right. Hey, tomorrow, speaking of music, my old friend Lisa Zane, who's a terrific actress who you have seen in Bad Influence, and she killed Freddy Krueger in Freddy's Dead, The Final Nightmare. She's going to be here live in studio. She's actually a great singer and a musician. She's got a band, and they're going to be playing a gig on Saturday night. We'll tell you all about that, and we'll hear some of her music. She'll be live. I'll be catching up with her. She's an old friend. I love her. And that'll be coming up on tomorrow's show.